Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Lucas Herbert is battering Royal Birkdale with a 9-under second round over in England. The 30-year-old Aussie carded an even par Thursday in his first round at the British Open. He's ripped through his Friday round and is three strokes up on American Jackson Suber. Suber's in the clubhouse at 6-under. Cam Young, Daniel Brown are at 5-under. A gaggle of golfers are at 4-under. Defending champ Scottie Scheffler shot a 2-under yesterday. He'll begin his second round shortly after 10 a.m. Eastern. In the NHL, the Blue Jackets got their 84-game schedule Thursday. CBJ opened the season on home ice Thursday, October 1st against Buffalo. First time since 1994 the NHL has played in 84 games in a regular season. Baseball second half resumes tonight for the Guardians and Reds. Cleveland hosts Pittsburgh at 7:10. Cincinnati's at Colorado at 8:40. Hear that one on the Fan after the Buckeyes show. This update is sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Take a vacation from high interest rates with special rates on balance transfers at BMI Federal Credit Union. BMIFCU.org/consolidate.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tabari here.
Well, Reese came in, and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then, it's a rundown. And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging. And only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a Friday edition of the program. Bo, the boys with you for the next three. Jacob Reimer in for Bake. Reese is here. I am here. We are loaded up. Tim Bay going to cycle a little bit earlier than normally this week. He will join us at 9:45, 10 o'clock. We will do what we learned this week. Quite a bit about the teams we did in 20 most interesting to this point. Speaking of 20 most interesting, Mr. Feinbaum will join at 10:30, which is apropos because we did Auburn yesterday. We will do Alabama today. Speaking of the Tide, they will be 20 most interesting. Luke Robinson, Locked On Alabama, will join us at 11:30. Very interested to see kind of take the temperature of the Crimson Tide, the preeminent program of the 2010s. But what will they be as this decade starts to turn on the back nine? I have this is happening today in the little small town I grew up in, Brady, Montana. They're doing an all-class school reunion. So the school was founded in 1929. It was closed in 2009 or 6, somewhere in there. It was closed. It was closed because, and honestly, it made no sense that they built it this way. But when they set all these schools up, they built them up along the railroad. So there was a little town about every 10 miles so that the folks east and west, think of the railroad as a north-south line, and then every 10 miles there was a town and a school, or thereabout, 10 to 15 miles, and then the off of that railroad line was east and west farmers would come into those little towns and harvest their goods. They would sell their goods, sell their grain, so forth and so on, have shops and stores and all of that. And it was a necessity 100 years ago because it took a lot more people to work land than it does now. And I'm sure you're seeing this in rural Ohio as well. Now, excuse me, the smoke's not great because the equipment has gotten so great. It takes less people to do it. So where, for example, like near the farm where my dad grew up and where I worked all the time growing up, there used to be 20 different farms out there about 20 miles east of town. And now there's four or five that are operating. So these schools have all kind of, these schools and towns have all kind of dried up and they've, consolidate a lot of them, and that's the way that it works now, which is fine. You have to adapt or die. That's the way it works. But long story short, my dad cannot believe that I'm not going to this thing. And I said, well, why would you think that I would want to go to this thing? And he goes, well, don't you want to see like all of these old people? And I'm like, no, I don't think so. I think there's like three or four that I'd like to see. And that's about it. And it got me thinking about, I remember thinking about this very vividly in high school about like coming back to the high school reunion. And I remember my parents going to like their 20-year high school reunion, 25-year high school reunion, all of those things. I've passed those benchmarks. We're past that now. And because it's so rural, they're doing an all class one. And it just got me thinking that I've not been to one. I haven't been to a college one. I've been to a high school one. I'm in the back nine of my 40s, and I have not gone to a single one of these reunions. And then I started asking like my wife, and I started asking buddies around town, do you go to any of yours? And none of them do. Do they still do these? I guess the proof is in the pudding. They are doing it out there. Around here, are you guys doing reunions? Like, are you doing 10-year? You're not old enough for 20, Reese, but like, are they doing those things?
I know the 10-year happened, didn't attend. I know they happen. Like, we'll be out at places and they'll have areas closed off for, say, a Watterson reunion or a Dublin, Kaufman, Scioto, Jerome reunion. Like, those are still happen, 10s, 20s. I do think they're very Facebook heavy or reliant heavily on Facebook or joining a mailing list to get any information about that. And so since I have not, I will not.
Yeah,
Prime time, you're too young.
I've gone through a five.
You're just out of high school.
Yeah. I've gone through you a could five, be my son. But we actually didn't do it. It ended up getting canceled. And I don't think I was going to go anyways because it was the week of Pumpkin Show down in Circleville. Oh, and God, it was also the week of my wedding. So there was a lot.
You got married Pumpkin Festival?
Okay.
Did you get married at the Pumpkin Festival?
No, we did not. It was Sunday after Pumpkin Show. So it kind of worked out that way, which was nice, a nice fall wedding. But my wife had hers, and we went to her 5-year, and she's actually, her 10-year is this year, but I don't know that we're going to that yet or not. So I have yet to go. I haven't had one, so I'm right there with you.
How did I? So it is Pumpkin Show.
Yeah.
I swear, all the times that I went down there, I used to have to go down there. We would cover it. Or if there was like if there was a high school football game on the Friday, then it would kind of lead into it. And inevitably, I would do a live shot in front of pumpkins. for some reason, I thought it was the Pumpkin Fest, but it's the Pumpkin Show.
It's the Pumpkin Show. And if you say it to any Circlevillian, Pumpkin Festival or Pumpkin Fair, they'll let you know about it.
They'll let you know. The Pumpkin Show.
Yeah, the Pumpkin Show.
All right, I'm sure I misidentified it on Channel 10 20 years ago. That's a bad joke. I'm sure people down there probably hated me for that.
Only 96 days, guys.
It'll be here before you know it. Their 4th of July parade, Reese.
Yeah. I mean, it's them trying to get something similar to what UA does celebrating America.
We take an entire week and we worship pumpkins.
Picked an interesting gourd to do it.
Hey, the Ohio State band's been down there a few times for
Ohio
a
State
parade.
Band was, the alumni band was riding in a cart driven by or pulled by Clydesdales in the UA parade.
Well, this is the actual.
Come on. Like,
the actual.
This is what I want. This is all
band.
I wanted on a Friday. I just wanted a Circleville UA fist fight over who has the better festival. That's what I want.
I'm Mike Tyson. You're the other character.
Okay.
It's your first time playing
Glass
Punch
Joe.
Out. Yeah.
That's pretty great. That is pretty great. So I'm not going. Although I will say, like, my football coach and the guy who preceded me at quarterback, who ended up being like my offensive coordinator when I played football, they did text me like a picture of the two of them, and I thought, well, that would have been fun. Maybe I should have done it. I'll be in Montana on Sunday, but we'll miss all of the festivities there. So we'll see. But I have not been to one, and I don't really have a whole lot of need or want to go to any of them. And I do, you mentioned it at Facebook. I think that's how everybody knew about it. Cause I was texting my dad. They're giving away like some of the banners and stuff that we had in the gym, or selling them, I think. I don't know. And I told my dad, I said, you got one job. You go get that thing for me. Like, I need that banner. I need that thing hanging in the basement. And he goes, well, how do you even know about it? And he goes, oh, let me guess. Facebook. He didn't call it Facebook. He called it something else. And I said, yeah, that's how I knew. So I don't know. He's completely in the dark. My guess is he'll show up and probably be on horseback is my guess. Be careful out there, kids. This smoke is nuts. It's nuts. This is honestly for all of the people that go to Montana in the summer. If you guess, well, you can't guess wrong, but if you get a smoky summer, this is what you'll land in. It can be like this. Like it's not always a scene from Yellowstone. Like sometimes it's this, what we're in right now. And it's not great. The boys, all of their activities, football camp, all that stuff was canceled. We had some member guest stuff at the club that was canceled today. And I know that, you know, just you go out, be out there for a little bit, not long. But the one thing that's interesting, I don't have my full sense of smell. I haven't since I had flu B or COVID or whatever the hell I had in February. So I can smell some things, but not everything. But to me, this smells like a little like burnt plastic. And I don't know what, are you guys getting that? Or do you just get straight smoke wildfire?
I got campfire this morning.
You got campfire? Okay.
Yeah.
Could just be my olfactory senses.
I think I'm kind of with you on the plastic. I guess maybe right in between of both you guys, campfire and plastic, I guess. So yeah, about there.
Yeah. Not great. Mm-mm. Not great out there. And so don't be out long. Don't have your pets out long. It should be, it looks like we have some storms coming in tomorrow. So that should blow it out relatively quickly. Typically that's the way it works out west. You get a big storm, you get some wind, and then it just kind of blows the whole system away. So my guess is that's what happens with this thing. Hopefully, fingers crossed, tomorrow we get a little bit of wind and that takes care of it a little bit. As I mentioned, lots to get to on the program today. Coming up next, and good Lord, what a leaderboard at the Open Championship. We do this for a living. I never heard of the guy who's about ready to shoot 60. So we'll get you updated on all of that. LeBron watch continues as well. Lots of college football on the program today. We're off and running on a Friday. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB, nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURN.
Man and Timmy are inviting select jabronis to the station for pizza. Hey, that could be you. Email goodcleanboy@gmail.com and tell us why you should be chosen.
Presented by Billiards Plus and sponsored by Paisano Peppers.
The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
After that very smoky start to the day, conditions gradually improve through the afternoon and especially toward the evening hours. Partly cloudy skies develop. It'll be warm with highs around 90. A couple of showers and storms are possible later today as well. For the overnight hours, partly cloudy skies, mid-70s. Saturday, warm, humid, breezy at times. Highs in the upper 80s with scattered showers and thunderstorms mainly in the afternoon and evening. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. The perfect show for quarter zips and khaki shorts. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, fellas, this one's important. If you listen regularly, you know my friends at Diamond Seller already guaranteed the best prices. That's the baseline. That's the jumping off point. But their wedding weekend takes it to another level. It's July 24th and 25th. That's next weekend. Get preferred bridal pricing, select wedding and anniversary bands with advantages up to 30% off, plus special no interest financing on engagement rings as well. It's a rare chance to pair real value with service and reputation that define Diamond Seller. Discover Wedding Weekend, July 24th through 25th, Sawmill Road, Easton Town Center. Tell them Bo sent you. They'll take care of you. They're my guys. So I see this on social that Ohio State is, they're getting a new video board at the shot. We're going to get a new video board in there. It looks like a nice one. It's big. It's clear. They got a quote from Jake up here as well on the board. Jake's quote is, "When the shot is rocking, it's one of the best places to play in college basketball. The passion from Buckeye Nation, what makes those environments so great. We want to create as many of those opportunities as we can, and the improvements to the video boards will only enhance the in-venue experience but also help better connect our fans with the team. If you could do one thing to improve the shot, what would you do?"
I would take out the entire upper bowl.
Can you take off the roof and then try to do something to give it some light? Because all I've ever wanted for that thing is to have kind of what I think it's Fog Allen, I think, has it, where you can see the outside from the actual arena itself. Like it feels like what it would feel like when you're buried alive. Like you're just in a box and like there's just catacombs around you.
I used to call it Oz.
It's a tomb.
Do you remember the HBO series Oz about the prison?
Yeah.
That's what it felt like because there was no light. It just was so dark and it was so much concrete. I know that they've thrown a lot into it. And I gave up any sort of notion of them moving off of it or moving back to St. John when they did all the basketball improvements. That's been about 8 years ago now, 10 years ago, when they put all the facility stuff around there and made that state of the art. And they did. That stuff's all awesome. All the practice gyms are awesome, and the facilities there are awesome. But the build, it is a tough building. I don't know if a giant video board's going to help, certainly. Rhyme Time, I think you – I'm probably with you in terms of just – it's just way too big. And it was done – I mean, the old heads know this. Dom and I talk about it from time to time. It was done because there was a race to build a concert venue in Columbus between Ohio State and Nationwide. And so they got it done first, but Nationwide built the better building. The Blue Jackets built the better building. And so that's the thing that's hard, is you're right down the road from one that has, honestly, and I know they got to throw some more money at it, but I don't know that there's an arena in America that's aged better than Nationwide Arena. Now, the ones I've been at, like, it's aged way better than, like, Rocket Mortgage. They threw a bunch of money at Rocket Mortgage, but that's mostly like facades and concourses. It didn't really change the arena itself at all. I've been to Conseco, or whatever they call the one in India. I've been there a few times. That one's held up pretty well. They've thrown a lot of money on the outside of that too. But I like Nationwide has been just pretty much great for the whole time. Well, you know, two plus decades.
And you're doing a lot of stuff there, like, other than concerts. Like, you've got NCAA tournament games there, and, like, the women's Final Four is coming up here. So, like, there's, like, definitely a big flexibility to where you can do just about anything. Like, Disney on Ice has been there. Come on.
Yeah. It's just better.
Yeah.
In every conceivable way.
I'm sure this is the last thing that... folks at Ohio State. Right. Well, thanks, guys. Can't you just talk about the good things?
When you ask that question, I'm like, well, you can't blow it up. So what's a thing you can do?
Yeah, it was, there's a million factors to it that make it really tough. The location makes it tough for students, especially in the winter. The lack of the parking, the lack of covered parking, like all of those things that just weren't thought of, or were, maybe they were just glossed over. You'd have to ask Andy Geiger and some of the folks who were around when they were building the thing about what the exact thinking of it all was. And you'd also have to ask, I mean, I guess I know the answer to the test. The reason that they didn't just do something to make St. John, because we had what you described, Reese. Like, we had our version of Fog Allen.
It's still there.
It is still there. And I long gave up the idea of them ever trying to retrofit it. But we have that. You know, we had it at St. John Arena. And have either of you ever seen a basketball game in there?
Yeah.
Not in person, but I remember when they did it a few years ago. Not a few years ago, like maybe 10 years ago when they did it.
When Holtman was here.
Yes.
Yeah. Before the shot went up, and when the shot was built, they would still do some games at St. John. I'm like, this is just such a better experience.
Yeah.
You did look straight down if mm-hmm. you were in the upper
which
level.
Is awesome.
But it was so great.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, and obviously it was for the concert venue aspect of it and more use for it. I get all of that, but the size was perfect. It had all the charm and character of these other places. I was at Fog in March, and I paid a pretty good chunk of change to sit really close to the court. And we were on a wooden bleacher, and it was fine. It was fine. Like, nobody cared. Like, it was. The environment was so great that nobody cared about it. So to me, I think that unfortunately there's not a whole lot they can do. I do think that they should close off that upper deck to provide atmosphere and just have people get as close as they can, because I wonder what that number is on the upper deck. Like, how many people seat up there and what that would do to capacity, because the real capacity you want is probably around 12 is really the sweet spot. Like, you don't need 20,000. It's just, there aren't that many games where you're going to get it, and it feels pretty cavernous. They've tried a bunch of stuff. I give them credit for that. They put the student section on the side. I mean, they did a bunch of stuff to try to do it. It's just probably too big of a building, but I'm happy for Jake. There's a lot of momentum. Now you got a scoreboard in there. The roster looks pretty good. They probably will start the year ranked in the top 25. Anthony Thompson looks pretty good. Jake, you got a chance to see him, didn't you?
Yeah.
This week?
Was out there yesterday. Jake Diebler opened it up and had an open practice yesterday, and got to talk to some of the freshmen afterwards. And it was a great practice, in my opinion. Like, Anthony Thompson, like, the jumper is beautiful, of course. That's what he's known for. But the biggest thing I took away from it was he was slashing a little bit. There was a play in a 5-on-5 drill where he ripped baseline and did a reverse layup on the other side. A few plays into it, he walled up Amari Bynum, and like mm-hmm. we know, Amari Bynum is a very big human being, and walled him up, and then ended up blocking a shot on the same possession right there. So like, that was what I took away from it, is that if he's able to show that he's more than just a shooter, like that's going to open the floor up so much, especially with what you got with John Mobley Jr. Like that, you got two dynamic weapons that can just pull it from anywhere, which is very nice to have.
Yeah, I've seen him play a lot. The kids participated in a camp with him last summer. Really warm kid, quiet kid, but a warm kid. His wingspan is until you guys see it, it's hard to wrap your head around how much space he can make up, how easy he flicks his shot. It's just effortless. And he's incredibly accurate. Pretty good shot blocker. You mentioned the play on Bynum that happened in practice yesterday. Like, yeah, I mean, it's a five-star, can't-miss guy that, you know, ought to be a top 5 to 7 pick in the NBA draft next year. I mean, that's kind of what you're getting here. So that changes certainly the way that you view this team, and it changes the expectations of it. And yeah, they are in a situation next year where, to me, and we're a long way from this, but when we get to, Reese, when we get to October, early November, we're like, all right, set the table for the expectations. You're not going to hear me say make the tournament. That's not an expectation. It's going to be Sweet 16. It's going to be top 5 in the Big Ten, that type of thing.
Yeah, just being bubblicious for February and March isn't going to cut it anymore.
No.
And I really give credit to Jake Diebler for what he's done in this offseason to be kind of front and center, or at least try to make themselves, you know, as available as possible before you get into football season. Like, there's been a lot of, you know, open available practices. There's been a lot of stuff from the Ohio State basketball program. The LJ Smith reclassification news, I think, helps with that. They mm-hmm. did a great job of just kind of navigating sometimes difficult waters. If a player's ready to go now, but you're not necessarily sure if you want him on the roster now, but they've made it work, and so far so good. And so now you do get a little bit of enthusiasm and some hope for the program. Football will kind of make it go away. But then you feel like you know these guys and you know this team a little bit better before, oh yeah, it's basketball season happens. Because it happens to all of us every year.
It does, yeah. Yeah,
except for,
I think
except for Reimer.
Yes. Well, Reimer never turns it off. I think the cool thing that Jake is doing, and it's kind of a reminder for all of us of how far the program fell at the end of Thad through the end of Holtman, is in terms of just the interest in the market for it. And Jake said this in this statement today, like when you're humming, the shot is pretty great. I mean, it can be great when they're really good. I've been there when they were number one in the country hosting Duke and all of that. And that's an incredible environment when it can be like that, but you got to win. And then people will jump on the bandwagon here. And I think what we've seen here over the last decade plus through the end of Thad and then through most of the Holtman years and the early part of Jake is that there has been kind of a relative malaise from the fan base towards the program. And I think Jake's fighting like hell to get that back. I think he's fighting like hell to get it back with his roster. I think the availabilities he's doing is awesome. The open practices are awesome. The stuff that he's doing at the shoe, even little things like the uniform choices, the Clark Kellogg's, the Jimmy J's, like all of that stuff, all that wins. They're doing all the right things, in the program. And now all you need is to win. And this roster is one that ought to win. And so they're setting themselves up for what should be a pretty fun year down at the shot. We are still dealing with LeBron watch. We have an open championship with the leaderboard and a guy on top of it I have never heard of. That's just the honest truth. My guy shot 62 today, 8 under on his round. It's been a scene across the pond. We'll get to all of that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
Sup, Jew.
Sponsored by Apex Pros.
The pros who knows.
Well, the truth is quite a bit is up. You could have a decision on LeBron James at some point over the next 24, 48 hours. I guess it could go to next week, too. We'll get into that in just a second. You got the Open Championship going on over at Royal Birkdale, which is on the western coast of England. You have a guy named Lucas Herbert who shot 62. He actually was 9 under on his round heading in. He must have bogeyed 18. So he finishes at 62, shot 8 under today. He is your leader. Jackson Suber is 2 shots back. Then Daniel Brown, 3 back. Soonjae Im is 3 back as well. And then there's a handful of guys at 4 that you've probably heard of. Your Sam Burns, your Morikawas, Cam Youngs. Some of those guys are in there. Francesco Molinari, who's won this event before. Ludvig Åberg is 4 under on his round already today. Rory McIlroy, 3 under on his round. So they're scoring over there at a pretty high clip. And so the only defense those golf courses have at the Open Championship is really weather. That's kind of it, because they don't do what we do at the U.S. Open over here. They're not going to trick up the course. They're not going to mess around with the greens. They're just going to let it play as it lands. And if they don't get weather and wind and rain and those type of things to make it tough, then you're going to be able to have target practice. And that's what you're seeing in round 2 of the Open Championship over in England. I can be candid with you. I had not heard of Lucas Herbert. Quiz texted me and said that he plays on LIV, and I guess that's probably why, because I have no point of reference on this cat at all, Reese. Had you heard of him? You do the updates. Have you heard of him?
No, I had to Google him this morning. 30-year-old from Australia. Like was said, he does play on the LIV golf tour. You jinxed him in the first segment thinking that he could card a 60, and he missed a putt on 18 that puts him at 62 for his second round.
Wow. Yeah, he went out. I mean, his front
on
nine
fire
shot,
early.
He shot 28.
Yeah,
pretty good. I think that's the lowest 9 in Open history.
It's got to be prime time. It's got to be.
It is
28.
Yeah,
he went birdie, 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 par, birdie, par, birdie, par, birdie. That was his front 9.
That's nice. It's pretty good.
It's like me on the old Tiger Woods game.
By the way, he plays for Ripper Golf Club on the LIV Tour. That's captained by
you
Cam
made
Smith.
That up.
He could have.
I searched what LIV team is Lucas Herbert on.
Do you have the LIV thing in front of you? Like, how many are they still tour? Like, event wise, do they even have left?
I think there's supposed to be like 1 left after the Open. I don't know when it is. I just went off of AI overview.
Yeah.
You would never ever have thought that thing could end because the Saudis got bored. I mean, I just assumed that they would dig in and. Endless supply of oil money and be cool with it, and they just didn't. They punted. So without their money, it's going to evaporate pretty quickly. But he's having himself a day over there, and this will be fun this weekend to kind of keep an eye on that. It'll go head-to-head with the World Cup. The World Cup final is set for Sunday. It is Spain. It is Argentina. They are going to do a halftime show for this thing that's going to feature, among others, Justin Bieber, Shakira, Madonna is coming out. Okay. How old is she? She's like 75?
67.
67. Okay. All right. God bless. That's fine. Enjoy yourself. That's great. They'll do a closing ceremonies as well. You put in here a special appearance by Tom Cruise?
Yeah.
Is he 75?
So I think Cruise is just, they're doing the closing ceremony before the match. And that's going to have Tom Cruise, a streamer called iShowSpeed. Post Malone's going to headline the closing ceremony that, again, starts before the match, which is confusing. No, Cruise is 64. Actually, just celebrated a birthday on July 3rd.
Okay. All right. So Cruise is in. I don't know what in the hell he's going to do there.
He's got to jump out of a plane, right?
I think.
I mean, at this point, like, if he doesn't do something that could endanger his life, you're like, all right, we've seen it all before, Tom.
Yeah. Yeah, so you'll get Spain and Argentina on Sunday afternoon, and then they're playing the consolation game Saturday. Brother Bone, he had an idea. Would the NFL ever be interested in taking the losers of the AFC and NFC championship game and playing a consolation game in the NFL? I don't think NFL owners or players would have any interest in that unless you massively financially incentivized. Like if there was $100 million on the line to be split for the winning team, then I think you would get a full effort on that, but it would take a number that big in order for people to really care. You can't. I see no other scenario where there would be any sort of hunger for that type of thing. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see. Like, I'm not going to watch this thing, but like, will France and England try? And they're rivals. They don't particularly like each other, but like, will either one really try? Like, if you're Mbappe and Dembele and Oh, Luise and those guys, like, are you out there going full bore? And by the way, if those guys play for PSG, Real Madrid, and Bayern Munich, like, do you even want them to if they're on your club team? Like, do you want Jude Bellingham going full speed if you're Real Madrid? I can't imagine it. Like, playing for nothing?
I thought of what Bones said about why Mbappe might go all for it since he's in the race for the most goals at the World Cup and he can win that because you don't know what Messi's going to do. You have to assume that he's probably going to maybe get a goal, but he had two assists in the last game with no shots. So who knows? Like if Mbappe scores a goal and Messi doesn't, then he's got the title. So maybe that's
the golden boot.
Maybe that's a little incentive type thing for him.
Because of the rivalry, once you get to Saturday, so it starts, I think, at 5 o'clock. Once you kind of get closer, I think, to the match, they probably start to feel a little bit. Right now, I'm sure England especially is still reeling from that semifinal loss.
Yeah, I think they're probably seeing Erling Haaland with a raccoon drinking out of a whiskey
pretty
bottle.
Pretty good life.
Horns on his head, hitting golf balls into the Mediterranean, thinking, God, I wish I was with him right now versus having to play this absurd game in Miami after spending a month in hotels in America or wherever they're staying. Do you think they got to be hotels, right? They're all at like Ritz-Carlton.
Oh, yeah.
You know, five-star
setups. Yeah, that'd be my guess as well. But I don't care. No, even if you've been in the best hotels in the world, if you're there for a month, you're sick of it. You're sick of the whole operation with it. Speaking of sick of it, I've reached that point with this LeBron thing. So he was on a taping of the Mind Game with Tyrese Halliburton. What are they connected with Fanatics? What's this about?
Like, so they do Fanatics Fest every year, and I think this is Michael Rubin just flexing what Fanatics is a part of now because they bring in everybody. And I mean everybody from like Gronk got dunked in a vat of Cane's dipping sauce yesterday from Tom Brady, who threw a ball into a target.
Yeah.
So Fanatics now owns everything, is now part of everything. And so I think this is Michael Rubin peacocking with it a little bit. And so LeBron's got one of two podcast tapings. He had one yesterday with Halliburton. They've got another one today. And yesterday he just played around with everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. He said, I won't hold you guys up too much longer. Even Adam Silver weighed in on it, saying where LeBron plays will affect the schedule. I'd like him to make his announcement already so we can finish the schedule. And then Dave McManaman was there. He covers the Lakers and LeBron for ESPN. Here is his thoughts on what's factoring into the time frame of the decision.
When it comes to his family, James said he is certainly weighing the thoughts of his soon-to-be 12-year-old daughter, Zuri. He made sure to tell her before he was leaving the Lakers, so she heard it from him first. And he told her that her feelings about the decision will, quote, mean a lot to him. I'm told that James is nearing that decision, and folks around the league are hoping it comes as early as next week.
I'll tell you what, he spent much of, if for all of the consideration of the 12-year-old daughter, he spent, what, a week in Europe playing golf, and he was in Northeast Ohio for another week playing golf. Is she with him on all of this? Because the one across the, and he's certainly entitled to boys' weekends and boys' weeks and all of those things, but I think that part is fascinating. If that's it, then he stays in LA and he played for the Clippers, or he played for the Lakers at the minimum, because he has a home there. Where's the other place he has a home, Reese?
Yeah, I mean, it's Akron, or outside of Akron.
Bath.
Is she just riding around in the cart with him?
I don't know what he's doing. I mean, it's clearly he's going back to Cleveland. I just don't see any scenario where it's anywhere else. And I saw the Pat Riley. You guys saw that yesterday where Pat Riley kind of had the slip. We got one more. So I could see them kind of stringing him along. But like, there is no, I mean, he could buy a home anywhere. He has familiarity in Miami. So maybe it could be between those two. The one thing I will say is if he did Golden State, he could still live in LA primarily.
No, he'll bunk with Draymond.
Well, no, I know he could, but like his family, that's probably an hour 20 flight. Private aviation from Los Angeles to San Francisco. So he could, Savannah and the kids, they'd all stay in LA and stay in the home, and he'd just be up, you know, at Golden State. So I think that would be a pretty easy one as well.
Goodness, flying to home games. That's such a flex.
That is. Yeah. I mean, rest his peace. Kobe used to do that because he lived in Orange County and he would chopper.
That's true.
He would chopper to Staples because he didn't want to deal with the traffic, but he lived down in Orange County. And I think they said, well, you can't live down there. And they said, if you do, you're going to have to chopper. And so he choppered to Laker games for a decade up there. So yeah, I don't know. Who knows? Will we get it today?
No.
No.
Yeah, probably not.
So he's got the shop that was on HBO for the longest time where they would sit in a barbershop and talk. Flo Balogun is a new Clutch Sports client. He's going to be on today. So you're going to get LeBron just peacocking and talking and doing the same exact thing he did yesterday.
I think you're right. Yeah. So I assume we'll get it sometime by early next week. We'll see. Tim May coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the ACC and the Big 12 as we approach media days for the SEC and the Big 10 in the next couple of weeks. He's up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
I have a special announcement. Common Man and Timmy is the most listened to radio show in the state of Ohio. Coming in at number two, Common Sense. You should listen anyway.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
The Fan.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Right Way Heating and Cooling and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
The friends are the guests and listeners.
Reese and Baker just work here.
Back to work. Back to work. Everybody. Work, 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 work. Work, work.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, let's head out on the Bryant Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. A little earlier than normal this week for our good buddy Tim May, the Tim May Show with Clay Hall on FanStream Sports. You go to the U.S. Open every year as a volunteer. Do you have any itch to go to the Open Championship?
Absolutely. I have an itch. I've got a little powder on the side here. Keep me from itching. Keep me from scratching. Absolutely, man. I'd love to see. You know, it's funny. When you look at these golf courses, you know, you can ask Timmy Hall because he's been over there, Scotland anyway. But you look at him, you go, man, you would go right on down the road to maybe look for one that looks a little bit better, you know, from an aesthetic standpoint.
Yeah.
But then you look at. What defends all these golf courses obviously are the greens and keeping the ball in play on the short stuff down the fairway, and so it's always been intriguing to me that, you know, in America we took golf courses to another level, you know, in terms of decorating the cakes, but yes, I've always been intrigued by the humps and the bumps and the spills and everything else that you can find on these open courses. I mean, I just, and the other thing, I would think you almost have to play some of these courses. Imagine some of these courses without the grandstands, like we see them every year. Oh, I would think you get lost sometimes. You know, wait a minute, which flag am I hitting to and why?
You're right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, a lot of shared greens. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of shared greens, you know, a lot of shared anguish. By the way, Lucas Herbert, did you see that this morning?
I didn't even know who he was, Tim. I know you went to a live event. I didn't even know who he was.
Yeah, I knew who he was, but I didn't know he was that guy. You know what I mean? And turned out he wasn't, you know. He does a Tim May. I'm sitting here, I'm taking a break from, according to my podcast here right now with Dylan Davis, but we both watched the putt. He pulled it left, yep. And, you know, just like Tim May would do in that situation. but then you see Sam Burns chip in on 18 for a 62. 62s are like cherries out there, man. Everybody's getting one today.
Yeah, it's crazy, the scoring. But the only defense they have is the weather, because they don't trick up the golf course. The course is the course. And if it's not going to blow, then you're going to be able to score. And so you're going to see a bunch of scores in the low 60s, mid 60s, my guess is, as the day goes along. Last week we had Big 12 media days. This week we have ACC media days. Where do you see those two conferences in the next 5 years?
That's funny, because Dylan and I were just talking about that on my podcast. My question to him was, Will the ACC look the same exactly a year from now as it does today, meaning membership, et cetera? And it could be people leaving after next year or something, right? But, I mean, already have their plans out there. I don't see the ACC holding together in its current form. That's because the reckoning has been hastened by this, you know, it's rumored that there's going to be some kind of legislation come out of Washington, right? It's rumored. Yeah.
Right.
But till that happens, so hold your breath. But you've heard me all along, and I'll stick to it till it doesn't happen. I mean, I eventually see North Carolina and Notre Dame in the Big Ten, and I'm going to say that till my ears fall off. And then I see Clemson, Florida State, and possibly Miami elsewhere. Not maybe not all three of those, but possibly elsewhere, maybe this time a year from now, or at least getting loading up the truck ready to move there. That's what I see. That doesn't mean it's going to happen, clearly. But I think we've got another orogeny coming when it comes to major college sports in terms of conference makeup. And I think those are the prime candidates. And I do not see Florida State in the Big Ten in any way whatsoever, which means it'll probably happen. And I see Miami begging its way maybe into the SEC. But I think, you know, does the SEC want either one of them or Clemson?
No.
So Clemson, to me, more fits what when I think of SEC, that's what I think of is a Clemson, just like I think of a Mississippi State or a Ole Miss, you know, in that kind of, you know, kind of outpost community kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But that's what I see.
Yeah, Florida State has that feel too. Florida State and Clemson are the two most SEC, but South Carolina doesn't want Clemson in there, and Florida doesn't want Florida State in there, and they don't want Miami in there. So I don't know.
Well,
I know the folks at Florida State.
Texas A&M didn't want Texas in there either. Go
but
ahead.
You and I both know that Florida and South, it's certainly Florida had more power in that league than A&M did when they were making those decisions. And the team that you're bringing in had more brand value than A&M in the regard of Texas. So, I, a little bit different. But here's the funny thing to me, buddy. I think the Big 12 is going to be fine. I think the Big 12 is like a cockroach, and it's just going to survive. And part of that is nobody wants the teams in that league, whereas the ACC makes no sense at all. I mean, Stanford and Cal are in that league, like SMU's in that league. It makes no sense at all what it is. And honestly, like, and I know I have a soft spot in my heart for SMU. I just think that that's a sleeping giant of a program. But if you're the SEC, and knowing the power brokers there, they might rather have SMU than Florida State. And I know that sounds crazy, but one's in Dallas, and they got oodles of money, and the other one is in a part of the country that you kind of already own. I just think this is going to be very interesting when the books get opened up and you decide if you're going to add teams. You have to think about the value. I don't think Clemson and Florida State add much value to the SEC. And I know that people at Florida State think they're coming to the Big Ten. I know that. I was there in March, and they believe it.
Hmm. I'm just telling you, I'm not a fan of that. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but I'm not a fan of that. I think North Carolina makes a lot more sense for the and then you think about how the Hobby Nobbies think, you know, that run the Big Ten. They may think Virginia makes more sense than
they would. I think
than Florida State, but because we're talking about the academic side of things, and we can even that discussion. But you know. When it comes to SMU, I agree with what you're saying, but you've already got Texas A&M, Texas, and Oklahoma, you know, and so I would disagree necessarily about SMU, except I think SMU does bring a lot of value in all kinds of ways. Because I grew up, you know, back in East Texas during the Southwest Conference days when SMU was, you know, kind of a big player. They end up being a big player in that. And I think it kind of rankled Texas, especially Texas, when Houston came into the SWC. That hastened Texas wanted to do something other than be affiliated with anything to do with Houston. It'd be very interesting, because it'd be interesting to see Texas and SMU in the same conference where they both can spend money any which way they feel like it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I got about 30 seconds. I even wonder about SMU for the Big Ten. It's an elite academic school. It's massive city, and it's in Dallas. Like, to me, if I'm the Big Ten, I'd rather have SMU than Clemson.
Yeah, well, I look at, like you're saying, in some respects, SMU would balance Vanderbilt in terms of being a private school, and would balance Northwestern in terms of being a private school in the Big Ten. So I could see that. It's easy in, easy out, man. It's about as easy in and easy out as you can come in terms of transportation. So, I mean, I could see that. I think I could see almost anything except maybe Texas Tech being in the Big Ten.
Yes, I agree with you. Cincinnati's probably going to have a long wait, too. Yeah, I think those are probably long waits, my friend.
Yeah, get in line, please.
All right, buddy. Good talking to you. Look forward to the podcast this week.
Tell Feinbaum I said hi, and what's it like covering the secondary conference in the nation? Tell him
I will say, tell him exactly that in 25 minutes, 35 minutes.
You got
Thanks,
it,
buddy.
See you, man.
See you, buddy. Take care. All right, there he goes. Tim May, the Tim May Show with Clay Hall on FanStream Sports on the Bryant Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. What we learned this week coming up next, Bishop and Friends, right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Casting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reese. Sir, a missed putt on 18 derailed a potential bogey-free round for Australian Lucas Herbert. Day 2 of the British Open rolls along at Royal Birkdale. Herbert's bogey has the 30-year-old in the clubhouse with a 62 on the day. That's good for 8-under. Got a 2-shot lead on Jackson Suber. Sam Burns carded a 62 Friday. He's 3 off the lead at 5-under. Rory McIlroy is at 1-under with a projected cut line at even par. Defending Open champ Scottie Scheffler shot a 2-under yesterday. He'll begin his second round in moments. In college football, Texas Tech has announced a new stadium partnership. Starting in 2026, the Red Raiders will play home games at Galaxy Stadium in Lubbock. Galaxy's an AI data center tech company. And baseball's back from the All-Star break. The Guardians have the Pirates tonight at 7:10. The Reds are at the Rockies at 8:40. Hear that one on the Fan after the Buckeyes show. This update sponsored by the Waterworks and Header Plumbing, Drain, Heating, and Cooling. Together to serve you better. Scheduled today at thewaterworks.net.
When General Sherman marched through Georgia, he was listening to this show.
Use your skills for good, young warrior.
This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour on a Friday. Mr. Feinbaum coming up in 28 minutes from now. I should tell you, and you should listen, that homes in Columbus are under constant attack. Pests like termites, ants, mice. Don't wait for an invasion. Protect your property and family with Rose Pest Solutions Home Service Program. The Rose Home Service Program provides year-round protection for one flat annual fee with regularly scheduled visits. Rose is local, family-owned, and trusted by your neighbors in Ohio for over 165 years. Get peace of mind today. Call 800-966-ROSE. Rose or visit rosepestsolutions.com. What did we learn this week? Hit it, fellas.
We're not trying to do too much around here, but over the course of 5 days, you might have gleaned some stuff. Bishop and Friends present What We've Learned This Week.
Sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Make a reservation today at highbankco.com. Dine, drink, distill at High Bank.
I think number one for me, and we kicked off 20 most interesting programs this week. We did Texas Tech on Monday. We did Texas on Tuesday. We did Oklahoma on Wednesday. Auburn yesterday. We'll do Alabama today. When I think of the four schools that we've done, and we'll, as I mentioned, we'll get to Bama here in about an hour from now. The two things that jump out to me, number one, I don't think there's a program in the country that has more pressure to succeed right now than Texas. I think Texas is at the point where they need to go win a national title, at least play in the game. If you play in the game and you lose in a tightly contested game to the Buckeyes, then probably you're forgiven. But anything short of that, and there is going to be some massive pressure on Steve Sarkisian to get that program over the hump. They've knocked on the door a long time. The amount of money that they put into the roster this year, the look of the roster this year, they don't really have any holes. If Arch plays the way that people anticipate him will, there's no reason that they are not there in that final game. We haven't done Oregon yet. I'm guessing Oregon's going to have a little bit of that pressure on them too. Haven't done Notre Dame yet. My hunch is they'll have a little bit of that pressure on them as well. But to me, we'll be hard-pressed over the next month to find a program that is in more of a vice grip than Texas is. The other thing, and I'll get your guys' comments on Texas Reese in just a second. The other thing that jumped out to me was, and I'm curious, the Alabama side of this. I came away from the Auburn conversation thinking, boy, are they set up here? Like, if Alex Golish can go, is that program a little bit of a sleeping giant? It might be because of the financial situations that they have. They got the Yellowwood guy who's got some money to throw around. He's the richest guy in the state. He's an Auburn guy. They seem to be pretty organized. They just have lacked the coaching. But could they potentially make a little bit of a leap? Probably not year one with Golish, but certainly something down the road. But the Texas one was overwhelming. When you're done with that Texas conversation on Tuesday, you say, well, they better get there because it's they're as all in as you can be.
I mean, it's the connection, and we don't, you know, sometimes things just work out very well. Like, we had Auburn. arguably their best player last season, is now at Texas.
Yeah.
And Anwar Richardson compared him to Jeremiah Smith, and while that got some laughs from us, that's certainly how they feel down in Austin about him, and that's certainly why he was the guy that they had to have out of the transfer portal. Now Arch Manning has a true deep threat, and it just adds to that pressure. Yeah, Texas has to do it this year, or it feels like it's never going to happen for Sarkisian, because you didn't do it with a Manning, you didn't do it with Quinn Ewers, and both of those kids coming out of high school and in their first couple of years at college weren't supposed to be generational quarterback prospects.
Well, Quinn was a perfect prospect, remember? Uh-huh.
99 five-star plus, whatever, soon to be six-star, however the hell they do these rankings.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's gotten the two quarterbacks you would have wanted in those cycles. He got to a college football semifinal game twice. Now it's time to go a little bit further.
You have to. And, you know, with it's understandable in Texas. It's less understandable with Alabama, the heat that is on Kalen DeBoer's seat. But I keep going back to, if they had lost, like, almost Alabama fans' consensus wanted Alabama to lose that college football playoff game against Oklahoma. And I wonder if Kalen DeBoer, obviously, he would have never wanted to lose a playoff game. That sounds insane.
Yeah.
But we'll have the sliding doors moments for Alabama coming up in the next hour. But, like, that's one of them. Mm-hmm. If he loses that game, is he not in Ann Arbor, Kalen DeBoer?
That's a great question. Yeah, that is a great question. And speaking of Ann Arbor,
whew.
Board meetings in Traverse City
that don't have audio.
That don't have audio, where nothing happened. We're doing the show on Monday. We go, Ward Manuel's probably gone by Thursday with all of the smoking gun. And there's just smoking gun everywhere. It's just a box of guns that are smoking, and nothing yet at Michigan. It's the old George Costanza. It's not a lie if you believe it, I guess. It's crazy to me. Now, I don't know if anybody else in the country is following this as closely as we are and the people in East Lansing are, but it's amazing that no other heads have fallen on this thing. And the more you read that report, and you were the first on this, certainly, Reese, I remember you and I talking about this years ago, very clearly Sherrone Moore was brought in there to be the fall guy. Like, he was the patsy from Jump Street there. Like, they needed somebody just in case there was more going on with Harbaugh. Somebody's going to have to take the fall for it. They promoted him. And then I'm not suggesting that they knew all of the stuff. Everybody knew all of the stuff that was going on with the affair and the subordinate and all of that stuff. But there certainly was aware of some of it. And they let it go for a lot longer than I think most people with any sort of sense would.
And that's the biggest thing, right, is anybody with sense would look at the school hiring a law firm, paying them $11, $12 million to do an investigation, the Wall Street Journal getting their hands on a great amount of that investigation, finding things that kind of rival Art Briles. Like, if it is confirmed what Art Briles did not or did do at Baylor, like, the idea that Jim Harbaugh knew about one of his staffers being impregnated by an assistant and setting up the abortion, mm-hmm. which is what's alleged in the Wall Street Journal report about the investigation's findings.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how you can't look and say that's as much lack of institutional control as there could possibly be. But then there's more with this.
Yeah.
And for everybody else outside of the Michigan ecosystem, the Michigan man has to just be, what more can you do? Like, what would it take for Ward Manuel to be, because he's not going anywhere. Like, they'd have done it already, right? Like, a Friday news
I would think it would have happened. I mean, Santa Ono, who's the president who covered up Harbaugh with the Stein stealing stuff, like, he's gone. So this Ward's kind of the last one standing. I think this is going to be very fascinating to see what Whittingham does there. And what that program looks like in the next 2 to 3 years. We had asked this question, Reimer, you went on with us. If I had to give you, if you could have the win total at Penn State or Michigan over the next 3 to 5 years, which program do you take?
Oh, man. I think I might have to go Penn State with that. Just because, like, I mean, is Whittingham going to coach for another 3 to 5 years? But I don't know. That's just kind of where I'm at with that. I think I would take Penn State stock with that. I also want to credit Dusty May for getting out when he did. Assuming there's no scandals around him, but, like, he boosted his legacy with the national championship, and then he got out of there.
So Bake was big on that too. I tend to think that that was that. I'm not saying it didn't contribute, but yeah. I tend to think that was. Hold on, you're going to let me coach Cooper Flag?
I'm with that too. I wanted to take that angle for a second of like, yeah. Hey, like I'm gonna strike while the iron's hot here, and while things seem to be crumbling down here in the athletic department, I did what I came here to do, and now I get an opportunity to go coach Cooper Flag. So yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, I think it's. I'm not saying that the chaos up there didn't contribute. I'm sure that it was part of it, but he certainly left at the ideal time to leave, yeah. Win a national championship with a really great team, and get out of there. And then your landing spot is Cooper Flag in Dallas, and all that comes with all of that.
So Tyree, Clay Thompson.
It's a good squad. Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a very interesting squad. We also had the other thing that we learned, and I guess we needed this, but maybe some of us didn't. That you do a World Cup in this time zone, and even when the United States is not involved, we're going to watch. Because the ratings for this have been incredible. The two semifinal ratings were massive. It dwarfed anything else that was going on this summer. We had the Baseball Home Run Derby, which didn't rate well on Netflix. No real surprise to me on that. It's a bit of a silo sport anyway, and then you do it on a streaming service, you're not going to get the numbers that you certainly expect. We had the All-Star Game as well. Also learned that if you host something in Philly, it's going to look awesome. They're just great at this. They just are. Reese even proposed every All-Star game in Philly for the next 5 years.
Yeah. Just put the baseball there. Because they give a damn. And they give a damn more than other markets. Like, they'll try to put this thing in a sterile location in Arlington, and nobody's going to care as much.
Yeah, that city's pretty damn good when it comes to their fandom. So, busy week. Very busy week, and what should be a very, very fun weekend as well, with the Open Championship going on, the World Cup coming to a conclusion, which has been nothing short of a smashing success. They've crushed it. They really have. Hydration breaks be damned, VAR be damned. They've crushed it, and you're going to get a great final. You're going to get Spain and Argentina. I just saw the uniform matchup for it. Spain's going to be in their traditional red over blue, which is spectacular, and then Argentina is in the light blue and white stripes with the white bottoms. So that's going to be a good-looking one on Sunday as well. I talked about this a little bit with Tim May. We will talk about it and hear from the commissioners and the bosses and the prospective conferences. The Big 12 and the ACC, what do those conferences look like even a year from now, especially the ACC? We'll get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Way to make sure you don't miss any of your favorite fan shows.
Oh no.
Download the Fan app, silly.
God damn it, I knew that.
App Store, Google Play, or just scream right at your phone. Psst, you can also listen to Buckeye Games. Do it now. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
After that very smoky start to the day, conditions gradually improve through the afternoon and especially toward the evening hours. Partly cloudy skies develop. It'll be warm with highs around 90. A couple of showers and storms are possible later today as well. For the overnight hours, partly cloudy skies, mid-70s. Saturday, warm, humid, breezy at times. Highs in the upper 80s with scattered showers and thunderstorms mainly in the afternoon and evening. For the Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Reese's mustache is so nice, it has its own area code. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
And we are brought to you, as always, by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for nearly 8 decades. Wedding weekend's coming next weekend, up to 30% off. You're going to crush it. You know that you will. Check them out. This is a great quote. Rhett Lashley, the coach of SMU, doing his availability at ACC Media Days. We aren't a blue blood. We're a new blood. We're living in what we do now.
That's a t-shirt.
Pretty good. Pretty good. Pretty
new
good
blood with a red pony on it.
Yeah. 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 They're doing well. We've been posing this to our various guests, and I'll pose it to Mr. Feinbaum in 12 seconds. What do these two conferences that went first look like in 3 to 5 years? The ACC, to me, and my standing on this has been the Big 12 is going to be a cockroach. They're going to survive. They're not going to be punching it the same way to the SEC and the Big 10. But that conference, I don't think, is going anywhere. And the irony of that is, I think a big reason that conference isn't going anywhere is because nobody wants anyone in that conference. Maybe BYU has a little bit of value, but that's about it. Everything else in that conference, the Big Ten would have no interest in, the SEC would have no interest in, and even BYU, neither one would, most likely. So you have a conference that nobody really wants to date. Meantime, the ACC has quite a bit of pretty girls that you might want to ask to dance, and you might want to take them to homecoming. They have quite a few of them. And the question is, though, are they the ones that the alumni bases think are the ones that are wanted? I've been asking the folks about SMU, but it's not just that. It's North Carolina, who's going to be terrible in football this year. The Big Ten wants them. The SEC wants them. I've been saying that for years. Feinbaum says that every time I ask him, that Carolina is the one that the SEC wants the most. There's still this love affair, and I think it's that Carolina blue that hypnotizes everybody. Jim Phillips was available this week. He was asked about conference expansion and realignment. He is the commissioner of the ACC. Here is his thoughts on that.
I've always wanted this conference to be a place where schools want to be, not that they have to be. So I'll leave it at that. I feel very good about what we've done over the course of the last 5.5 years. We strengthened ourselves, you know, during that time of movement, conference expansion with 3 great schools and 2 new markets. And so, again, I want people to want to be in the ACC, not forced to be in the ACC.
Well, the irony of that statement is the reason he added the 2 markets, which is the Bay Area and Dallas, and added those 3 institutions is because by doing so, it kept his total number of participants in his league above a number that if Florida State and Clemson are to leave, that current package with ESPN isn't torn up. That's why those teams are in that league, so that the number is big. So if there is an exodus that comes after next year for the 2028 season where they can start to get out of this thing, if that does happen, everybody else in that league will be protected. That's the irony of all of this. If you just go to whatever website you go to and just look at the ACC standings and just look at the teams that are in that league and say to yourself, what in the hell am I looking at here? Boston College, California, Clemson, Duke, Florida State, Georgia Tech, Louisville, Miami, North Carolina State, Pitt, SMU, Stanford, Syracuse, Virginia, Virginia Tech, and Wake. What is that? What is that league? What does it look like in 3 to 5, and which programs would you want if you were the Big Ten? I've contended that the SEC doesn't want or need any of them. I stand by it. I don't think that they do. Could I see DeSantis, who's a pretty powerful governor, like leveraging and leaning on the SEC to take Florida State? Maybe. I think if you were going to take a team in Florida, if you're the SEC, you'd probably rather have Miami. That's a market that you don't have. I don't think you need Tallahassee. And I was there. I saw firsthand what they've done for the facilities. They are better than any of the facilities in the Big Ten. I promise you that. But I still don't know if that's a fit in almost any way for the Big Ten. And the way that that program is kind of caroming kind of to no man's land, I think it's kind of the worst possible time for them to be bad. And same is true of Clemson. And Clemson's a really cool place. It's an outpost, but it's a really cool place. And it's a place that a lot of Northern kids are applying to and trying to get to school in and want to go there for college. And I get it. It's really cool. But like, they're going the wrong way. Are these even appealing?
5 years ago, Clemson would have been the crown. I mean, the eye of the SEC's eye, or the apple of the SEC's eye. But now I don't even think they would take Miami, but I think with the SEC is they would only do expansion if the Big Ten was. Like, they wouldn't be the one to initiate conference expansion. They would just... So many people that are so much smarter than me than this have said that the SEC is fine just standing pat. And why wouldn't they be? And for ESPN, you're like, no, we're good, because if you want to add more schools, you're adding more inventory and you're already not able to air all of the games you're contractually obligated to. So more just feels like the wrong direction for the SEC and for ESPN. I keep thinking that if you want North Carolina, you've got to take Duke. Like, that's the ultimate. You got to go, but you got to take your little brother with you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is no way that those two schools go to a different conference than they go together.
I agree.
So yeah.
And little brother is the correct term there, by the way.
I saw the smile come across your face when I said that. SMU, I feel, is like the only desirable one of these schools. Maybe Miami, but I don't know how long this can last. It feels like all of their big money boosters are getting investigated by another federal agency.
I was thinking, yeah, for football purposes, there's no one other than Miami right now that's more appealing to SEC or even Big Ten. Like, if you're going based off brand and history, then sure, Florida State and Clemson make sense. SMU, I mean, they're kind of on the rise, so that makes sense that way. But, like, North Carolina is not for football. You're bringing them in for basketball purposes. And
people see that Argyle, though, dude. They see the Argyle, and they see the Carolina blue, and they can't see straight. They just do. It's intoxicating.
I know.
As you know.
But, like... I want them to be so bad this year that Bill Belichick does get out of there so that they can just stop focus on being wanting to be a football school. They need to realize what they are, and that's why they're not going to be going to a Big Ten or SEC is for football, is the brand that they're going to bring with Jordan and with basketball and all that. And I was going to go exactly there, Reese, that if the only way that I want North Carolina to leave the ACC is if Duke's going with them, because that's a rivalry in basketball that you cannot only have one time a year. You have to do that twice. It just doesn't make sense to only play it once.
Yeah, you could. I mean, I suppose they could get creative and try to do it out of conference twice. Everything I've been hearing is that the Big Ten doesn't have much interest in Duke.
Yeah.
And Tim May reiterated something I've heard for years, that the two ACC teams that the Big Ten would want are North Carolina and Virginia. They are intoxicated by the Tar Heels, yeah, and the blue and the Argyle. And then at Virginia, they're intoxicated by Thomas Jefferson and all that goes with that. And so those are the two that I've always been told that the Big Ten would want, would be those two. And I do think that what the Big Ten will do here is keep a very close eye out. If the ACC starts to crumble, does the Big Ten use that as a means to force Notre Dame's hand? Because I think that's their ultimate wish, is an ACC crumbles and you force Notre Dame into your league. And this has always only ever been about football. That's what it is. So Notre Dame is the biggest brand out there from a football standpoint. Florida State still has a big brand in football. Clemson's got a big brand in football. Miami's got a big brand in football. But that is, I mean, Clemson and Florida State are deep south. They don't fit any more than Washington and USC and UCLA and Oregon fit. It doesn't make any damn sense to have all these teams in here. And if you're the Big Ten and you're going to do this, you have to decide, if we add these teams, are we exponentially growing the amount of money we can make to make up for it? And I don't know that it does too much. And I think it absolutely doesn't in the SEC. I just don't see how they would be better themselves financially by adding any of these. And that's what this is all about. Dabo Swinney, he's hanging in there, man. He had his availability yesterday. You think about it, this guy was, you know, 5-10 years ago, this was the program. This and Bama, this was the top of the sport. It's been obviously a while since. Last year, they were the preseason favorites. They fell completely on their face almost immediately. He had his availability yesterday. Let's hear from him.
Yeah, I mean, we earn that. I mean, you get what you earn. I mean, but at the end of the day, it's you just said it. I mean, if it was about what people predicted and what they said, we'd have won the national championship last year and won this league. But, you know, we got what we earned. So, same thing. It's not about what people predict or say either. If they say you stink, it's about what you do. And so we're just focused on doing.
It's hard to see any road path forward for them in this. And the irony of all of this for Florida State and Clemson is when it comes time for them to be able to leave the ACC and financially be able to afford it, their programs appear to be in the worst spot that they've been in a long, long time for both of them. So what is the appeal? We'll ask Mr. Feinbaum about this in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination. Bishop and Friends present college football's most polarizing figure.
Oh, Bob, let's go!
tonight.
Hey, Paul, how you doing? Come on back to our show, Tim. The audience hates you.
This is ESPN's Paul Feinbaum, sponsored by the Roofing Guys. For all your roofing, siding, and gutter needs, contact the Roofing Guys at theroofingguys.com.
All right, buddy, I'm going to have you look into your crystal ball right out of the gates here. 5 years from now, what does the ACC look like?
It looks a lot smaller than it is because, Bo, I don't think it's sustainable. And watching, not closely, but from a distance, the media days this week, it's just so disjointed. California, Stanford, Boston College, Miami, SMU. I mean, it is just one of the most absurd configurations, and I just don't think it is going to make it. The contracts start to run out at the beginning of the 2030s, and someone is going to be bold and say, we've had enough.
Yeah, I just literally on our show in the last segment, Paul, I literally just read every name in the conference and at the end just said, does any of this make sense? And it's just the damnedest thing. And I think the irony of all of this is the two that have been the chestiest about wanting out, and Florida State's been awfully chesty. Unfortunately for both of them, Clemson and Florida State, it feels like those programs are heading in the wrong direction to be, for lack of a better phrasing, the pretty girl that gets asked to the dance. And so if you are the Big Ten, I don't know that either one of those are appealing.
No, and both are really in transition. Florida State, Norvell will be fired at the end of this season. That's a fait accompli. And I'm sure you alluded to it, but listening to Dabo Swinney yesterday was really sad. I mean, he's trying to convince us of how great he used to be. We saw it, from 2015 into 2020. Other than Alabama, they were the best team in the country, and they won two championships. But Dabo's giving you stats yesterday, not only of the championships, but of what their record was leading in the fourth. I mean, just fourth quarter, absurd things that have nothing to do. He lost six games last year with the Heisman favorite and what we were told was the best defense in America. And someone asked me yesterday, like, what would you consider a good season for them? 9-3 would be their top end, and that's really not very good by Clemson standards, and I'm not even sure they can get there.
So you and I only talk once a week, but you know me quite well because I've just played a cut from Dabo in the previous segment and I just went, what does this sound like? And up here, a lot of people don't get the reference, but having covered the end of it, Paul, it reminds me of the end of Bobby Bowden at Florida State. Bobby would do this. He would have these press conferences where he would talk about this run in the 90s. Now, the difference was Bobby was 80 at that time. He wasn't still a young man. And I think, you know, the sport had kind of passing by. His kid as his offensive coordinator. It was a mess. But that's what Dabo sounded like to me.
No, he plays the good old shucks. Like, you know, I think I'm still the coach. That doesn't work anymore. His record is unbelievable. But the last, I think, 5 years, he's lost 3-3, 4-4, and 6. And, you know, I covered Saban, as you well know. A bad season for Nick Saban was losing in the national championship game. That's how we viewed it. And it was similar to Dabo. I remember 5 years ago saying, you know, Dabo's dynasty is done. And they've done nothing since then. And, you know, they have a new quarterback. I mean, he's bringing back the band. I mean, he brought back Morris, who was a disaster as a head coach. I don't know if that's the way you do it. And besides, I mean, they're no better than fourth right now in the league. We just got through talking about is about to blow up.
So you and I have talked about this a lot. North Carolina would be the one the Big Ten would want. It'd be the one the ACC would, or the SEC, I think, would want too. Is there anybody else in that league that would expand the financial footprint of the Southeastern Conference? There are a couple that I could make the argument maybe would for the Big Ten. Is there anybody other than North Carolina that would expand the financial footprint for the SEC?
I mean, in a weird way, Miami, because they are a brand and they do represent, when they're good, they represent more than just a private university in a desirable location. After that, I mean, SMU is intriguing only because they're so rich. I mean, let me give you something. A year and a half ago, the president at the University of Texas, now do I need to tell you the haughtiness of that university, left Austin to take over at SMU. Why? Money. The money there is so available. That told me there's more to SMU than I was led to believe. Rhett Lashley has turned down at least one, maybe two SEC jobs to stay there. So, I mean, that's hard to explain to people where you live, but I would watch them closely.
So once again, you and I are on a similar thought. I just made that case 20 minutes ago that if the Big Ten was going to take anybody other than Carolina, that I do think SMU is more intriguing to me than Florida State or Clemson. You give me Dallas, you give me easy direct flights, you give me a program that is a school that's incredible academically, and then financially they're loaded. I'm with you. I see them the same. So I think they're a real interesting program to watch in all of this. And of course, the Big Ten's big workaround here is Notre Dame. I think that's kind of the thing that they're working for is if the ACC crumbles, come on in, Irish, you should have been here a long time ago. So that's kind of the other one that's out there. And there's someone that needs to watch because if the ACC does crumble, do they try to prop it up on their own?
And I think Notre Dame's interesting. I was on Get Up this morning, and following me was Marcus Freeman and their cornerback. I mean, they had to go to New York because they don't have a media days. And by the way, they can do that. But at some point, somebody up there is going to go, we're really not, we have all the money. We have a great endowment, but let's make it easier. And I would say the Big Ten is a good answer for them.
All right, Paul, we're doing 20 most interesting programs on the show. We have a new program every day. So we've done Texas Tech, Texas, Oklahoma. Yesterday we did Auburn. Today we're doing Alabama. This is obviously a place you know quite a little bit about. I was doing the Auburn, and we never had made Auburn one of our 20 most interesting, but Alex Golish is a local guy. He's got that job, a little bit of momentum. I started to dig in on Auburn, and I don't know them the way that I know some of the programs down there. But financially, they're in a pretty good spot, and they've got some big money boosters that seem to be pretty organized. Meanwhile, the thing has changed at Alabama, obviously, with NIL and free transfer and all of it. When you think of those two programs and where they are right now, what comes to mind for you in terms of just the temperature in those two fan bases?
Auburn could be very dangerous in the future. You always hear, like, I heard Colin Cowherd the other day saying the SEC doesn't have any money. Well, not as much as the Big Ten, but Auburn has two billionaires connected to the university. Alabama has zero. Because Alabama is just not that rich of a state. I think DeBoer is going to be the telltale. If he bombs, and that's a story we'll be following very closely this year, then I think Auburn could ascend. I mean, in the 80s, Pat Dye got to Auburn. They had lost to Alabama 9 straight times, all of them to Bear Bryant. And they went on a run, as you well know, Bo Jackson, Cam Newton 25 years later. And Auburn has played for the national championship twice since 2010. But you don't know it because it's been 6 years since they've had a winning record. But they're capable of it.
Paul, we're going to do Alabama here in 20 minutes, and I saw a video from Nick Saban. It must be his daughter, and they're at Bryant-Denny, and his grandson or granddaughter, I couldn't tell, is running around the field, and Saban's walking around the field. And I just think to myself, my God, how could DeBoer succeed there? How can you possibly? He's not living in Saban's shadow. He's living in his house.
Yeah, and I know this will sound disrespectful, but Nick Saban just isn't going anywhere. I mean, if he had gotten a job somewhere else in the NFL president, he would have left. But, you know, he's doing game day, which means he's on the college football mind every single Saturday morning. He has an office there, and he likes going to games with his wife. So you're going to see him. And by the way, it's more her wanting to go to the games, but, you know, he's making up for, you know, 50 years of ignoring her by going to a couple of football games a year. So you'll see him at the Georgia game. You'll see him at other games. And every time you see him, it suffocates Kalen DeBoer even more. I've told you the story about watching them together at a celebrity thing. DeBoer is a shrinking violet compared to Elvis Presley.
Yeah, there's no chance. You have no chance to succeed in that scenario. I do have to wonder, like, if he loses earlier, is he the head coach at Michigan? And honestly, who would have blamed him? Which gets us to SEC Media Days. Buddy, buckle up. Buckle up. Give me a Kiffin prediction for next week.
Well, I mean, Lane Kiffin has been muted now for almost 3 months. He did that Vanity Fair interview. He spent 3 days trying to clean it up, and I'm telling you, we have not heard from him since. It came out today that there's a book being written about him, which, you know, may or may not upset Kiffin. I'm sure it will a little bit, knowing how paranoid he is. So I expect him to say something about that at Media Days. But I think you'll see Lane Kiffin on lithium this week in Tampa. I think his handlers do not want him to create any more attention that he already has.
When you give me a heavy jump in your crystal ball, SEC Media Days conclude next week. What is the number one talking point coming out of it?
It's going to be Kiffin, because all the other stuff that's more important is going to bore me, you, and especially the football audience. Because, you know, how many times do you want to hear about the Senate bill, about NIL, about all these things that are just being beaten to death? And Kiffin is the biggest storyline. Is can the SEC finally, you know, get to the championship game and end this three game national championship losing streak to the Big Ten? But the most intriguing story is Kiffin.
It's going to be a scene, man. Enjoy it down there. I know that you will, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks for your time, buddy.
Thank you. Talk soon.
There he goes, the Paul Feinbaum Show, ESPN, SEC Network, joining us on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We'll do Thing or Not a Thing next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Your favorite fan shows are available as a podcast. What a concept! And don't miss exclusive podcast content like Austin and Burn. Listen on your schedule from anywhere in the world. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
Taking the art of sports radio and day drinking to a whole new level. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little Thing or Not a Thing on a Friday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or Not a Thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
So on Saturday, September 5th, Texas Tech is going to host Abilene Christian. They will be doing so on the field at Galaxy Stadium. The Red Raiders announced today a 15-year landmark naming rights deal with Galaxy for their stadium and to incorporate NIL opportunities and investments into the West Texas region. So Galaxy is a global technology and financial services company building the on-chain finance and AI infrastructure foundational to the code economy. That's according to the release. They work in financing with data centers and other AI stuff, and they're located just outside of Lubbock, Texas. Galaxy Stadium, thing or not a thing?
You know, as stadium naming rights go, you could do worse. And it's got a decent ring to it. I mean, Galaxy Stadium doesn't really fit, like, when I think of West Texas and Landman and Friday Night Lights and all the stuff that you think of when you think of West Texas. But just from a name standpoint, you could have done a whole lot worse. So, by the way, get used to it. Get used to it. You're going to see that this is the old phrase we use all the time. This is found money, and you're going to have to find some. So Ross Bjork's going to be doing this. Whoever's going to be the new athletic director at Michigan's going to be doing it. They're going to be doing it at Penn State. They'll be doing it everywhere because you have to find some money. So it's a really smart thing, and I do think as taking the money for the found money thing goes, Galaxy's not so bad. You could have done a lot worse.
Yeah, I don't mind that name. It's not bad. I think it is a thing because, like you just mentioned, Bo, I was kind of going to go there. It could be a ripple effect of down the line if we're going to now see more programs and universities add sponsors to their stadium titles or something like that. I mean, we've been talking about a lot here in Columbus about jersey patches and if stuff could come to the shoe at some point. And I really don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities happening very soon, like within the next year, and maybe even shorter than that. So I think that's why this is a thing, is because it could cause some more movement with some other universities.
Yep.
In something that felt like it happened months ago, but it wasn't really official until the beginning of July, Giannis Antetokounmpo, introduced by the Miami Heat Thursday, it was revealed that he'll be wearing number 7 in South Beach. The 31-year-old Antetokounmpo wore 34 during his 13-year career in Milwaukee, told reporters yesterday, quote, "I feel like 34 holds so much weight and has so much history, and out of respect for the organization that drafted me, I decided to leave that number there," end quote. Thing or not a thing?
I think Giannis is just a little too nice of a guy. is what I think. And this doesn't have anything to do with the number, but I think what his quote here that you read, Reese, tells me is that this is a guy who is incredibly conflicted about leaving Milwaukee. And because he was so conflicted by it, he didn't force their hand as soon as he probably should have. And he could have gotten out of there a little bit earlier. Now, he did win a championship there. So this isn't Garnett in Minnesota where he didn't contend. Like, he won an NBA championship for Milwaukee. He delivered in the biggest possible way. But I think he probably should have got out of there at least a year earlier, maybe 2 years earlier, and he would have found himself in a little bit of a better spot. What number he wears is not a thing to me. We saw LeBron wear 6 down there after wearing 23 in Cleveland. So the fact he's wearing 7 isn't a big deal to me. But I think what I read out of this is the incredible loyalty that he has to Milwaukee probably prevented him from leaving when he should have.
Yeah, the first thing that I thought of, oh, it's just one more number than LeBron was in Miami. Six and 7. But I think the Bucks did a horrible job in this whole process of just now making this move. Because of the draft capital that you got with it, like, this draft class was one of the greatest that we've ever seen. And if you made that move well before, I mean, you could have been higher in the lottery then to maybe where you can get in position. I mean, shoot, if we follow the trends, if you trade your star like Nico Harrison, then you're gifted with the number one overall pick. Then that may have been a case for Milwaukee. They trade Giannis during the season, and then maybe they end up with DeBanza or Peterson, Boozer or Wilson, one of the four. But no, you're not, and now you're in a rebuild process that who knows how long that's going to take.
We had Conor McGregor's return last weekend, July 11th, was the 69-second comeback at UFC 329. The return did drive record streaming numbers for Paramount Plus. Nearly 16 million viewers. It peaked at 8 million. It's the platform's second most watched live broadcast after the 2024 Super Bowl. McGregor does have one more fight he's contractually obligated to fulfill. Back in January, Paramount Plus debuted the UFC after signing a $7.7 billion deal over the next 7 years. Thing or not a thing?
This isn't a thing for me because I don't do UFC. It's just I don't have an interest in it. I know McGregor is a star, obviously, and I think what we are reminded, and we've seen this in boxing and UFC in recent years. Like, didn't McGregor fight Floyd Mayweather or something?
Yes, yes.
At one point, we've seen like these guys fight like the Paul guys. Like, they fight some of these guys. What those sports need, what combat sports need, whether it's boxing or UFC, you need personalities to sell it. You need that. You need the combination of talent, but even more so personality to sell it. And McGregor still has that, despite obviously being well past his prime. And then what did he shred his knee in this thing? So it's going to be a while before he gives him that second fight.
Yeah, this was a wild night for me. I'm not a big UFC guy, but like, I'm a McGregor fan, and like, I have friends that are very much into UFC, and like, I knew that he was fighting, so I'm like, okay, like, I'll try to tune into this, and I'm like, okay, like, it's the main event. It's not going to start till midnight or around then. And at the same time, the Argentina game, I think against Switzerland, was going on, and I was like, okay, like, this is a close finish. I'm going to watch the end of this, and then I'll flip it to Paramount Plus and watch the McGregor fight. That game ends. I flip it to Paramount Plus, and they're just congratulating whoever he fought. And I'm like, what happened? It's not even midnight yet. I thought this was, like, I thought we were still in the buildup to this. And so then I rewound it and saw the 60 seconds that it was.
Yeah,
so wild. It was a crazy scene, crazy story. Excuse me, crazy story. But I find it crazy that it is getting that many views. But like, McGregor, he moves the needle, like you were just mentioning. He's got the personality. He's got all that to where whenever he fights, you're going to tune in to see what he does and the antics that he does.
The Athletic reported earlier this week there's a FIFA mandate with games in the World Cup. So you'll see Saturday for the consolation, Sunday in the final, to air what's called a dignitary shot in each half of each match. The dignitary shot is one that showcases the highest ranking officials present at a game, as well as those described by FIFA and its accreditation system as VIPs, very, very important people. Those can include heads of state, confederation officials, celebrities, or members of soccer federations. The chief VVIP, it would appear, is Gianni Infantino, who's the president of FIFA. He reportedly used a private jet
of course he did.
To go to at least two matches in the World Cup stage a day.
Where did he get the jet, Reese?
Qatari Airways.
Where was the last World Cup?
Qatar?
Oh.
It's Qatar. Am I saying it wrong?
It was.
Oh.
It was there.
Oh, so, oh is it?
You know.
Oh, was it?
Oh. Oh.
I bet they did provide a jet.
My windy fingers are up here.
FIFA says it would be misleading to say it's directed specific shots of its president during games in its World Cup, end quote. Thing or not a thing?
Just a gross thing. Just a grift that never ends, right? I mean, that's like the, of course, the jets provided by the Qatari. Of course, that's how it worked because that's what FIFA is. It's a grift. So you'll get Donald Trump will be there because the president's going to allegedly he's going to be there. You're going to get Spain. You're going to get Penelope Cruz and Javier Bardem will be represented. And I wonder if Shakira is going to be there, and she'll probably be rooting for Argentina out of spite because her ex-husband and baby daddy's a Spaniard. So my guess is she'll be there in Argentina gear. Those would be my guesses.
Yeah, I'm with you on this being not like a weird thing, but I do have a question.
Mm-hmm.
So the VIP, Justin Fields, was at a World Cup game, and they showed him. Does that classify him as a VIP?
It would now.
He's valedictorian of summer school. That probably wasn't a game that had a lot of big VIPs.
I think it was an England game.
Really?
One of their comebacks. It was in Atlanta.
So they showed Beckham, obviously, a lot. And then that was it, huh? Okay, good job out of Jay Fields.
Yeah.
That's nice. Final hour of the program on a Friday coming up next. 20 Most Interesting continues. We put a ribbon on the Iron Bowl. We did Auburn yesterday, Alabama today. Are those two programs set to change spots in the pecking order in the SEC? A big season for Kalen DeBoer. Get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reese, sir. Only six golfers have shot a 62 in a major championship. Two of those were carded this morning in the second round of the British Open. American Sam Burns and Australian Lucas Herbert were pretty good Friday at Royal Birkdale. Herbert has the lead at 8-under. Burns is 3 back at 5-under. Jackson Suber and Cam Young are 2 off the lead at 6-under. Defending champion Scottie Scheffler is at even. Looks like the projected cut line will be right there at the end of today. In soccer, Spain takes on Argentina Sunday at 3 in the World Cup final. England and France play Saturday at 5 o'clock in the consolation game in Miami. The Columbus Crew's back from the World Cup break next Wednesday, hosting NYCFC. The black and gold signed defenseman Eric Bailey this morning, the 32-year-old from the Ivory Coast, made 70 appearances for Manchester United from 2016 to 2023. This update sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Take a vacation from high interest rates with special rates on balance transfers at bmifcu.org/consolidate.
Distilled sports discussion served in light beer quantities. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
So Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey opens this week. It's being lauded as, you know, maybe his finest film, and that's saying something because he's got a lot of them. USC 13 hours ago tweeted out, "Our Odyssey begins August 29th. And it had a picture of, like, you know, the Trojan helmet with the feathers and all of that. And it says The Odyssey, 8/29/26. USC's a great school, right? It's really, really tough to get in there. I think it's a great school. They know what happens in The Odyssey, right?
Yeah, not grow up. They might not.
The Trojans lose, as it turns out. They lose in that.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like they know about it.
Do you guys know who they open with?
I don't.
San Jose State.
Also the Trojans.
Spartans.
Spartans and Trojans. Oh, no, so San Jose State's the Spartans. They're the one of Troy. That's right.
Okay. They're the Trojans, for God's sakes. They're playing the Spartans. Have you read it? It's been around for a while. They've done a lot of movies on it. What are we doing, SC? What are we doing out there, Link?
You got a kid in the, you know, their 20s, not familiar with the Odyssey, but trying to, you know, jump on.
Their helmets look similar, so, yes. I mean, holy smokes, what a miss. What a bad job. It's a really bad job. I don't know. What would that be like? Like us like having like the outcome of the Civil War wrong with like a Sherman?
Yeah, if you tried to do
like
something.
Alabama putting a picture of like William Tecumseh up and being like the path to Atlanta ends or something like that and going, well, dude, do you know what happened there? Do you
like
forget?
Georgia doing that? Yeah.
Georgia doing it. That'd be the best one probably. Good grief. Speaking of Bama, they're 20 most interesting today. Hit it, guys.
We'll expand conferences. We'll expand the playoffs, but we'll never, ever expand our interests. Bishop and Friends present the 20 most interesting programs.
And today we center on the Crimson Tide of Alabama. Just 7 returning starters for Alabama, 3 on offense, 4 on defense. They were pretty active in the portal. They got Noah Watt, Rogers receiver out of NC State in the portal. Ryan Williams comes back for his 3rd year. He's added a name and a hyphen to his name. He's now Ryan Coleman Williams. He was really uneven last year. A lot of drops after a sensational rookie season and kind of came back to earth a little bit. We got a couple of their defensive players are going to start for us. So they had some exodus on that side of the ball as well. Last year they went 11-4 overall. They did go 7-1 in the SEC. They got whipped by Georgia in the SEC title game 28-7. They did beat Oklahoma in the college football playoff first round, and then they suffered probably the most humiliating loss in all of the college football playoff, and probably the one loss that if you just flipped on a TV and you'd been living in a cave in Burma like Peterman and Seinfeld for 2 years, you said, wait a second, I'm watching a Rose Bowl and Indiana's ahead of Alabama 38-3. But that happened, and the fallout from that, I think, was pretty significant. This is, I don't know if it's a do-or-die season for Kalen DeBoer, because I don't know if they have the money to do his buyout, but it certainly feels like that. There's no question that you can ask yourself, if they lose to Oklahoma in the college football playoff first round, as Reese alluded to earlier, is Kalen DeBoer the head coach at Michigan? And my sense is that he maybe did. In recruiting, they're doing a pretty good job. They're third best class in 2026. 39th in 27, but that's pretty early. Transfer portal grade was about 18, somewhere in there. DeBoer is entering his 3rd season in Tuscaloosa. He's a great coach, but that's just a really tough circumstance. He's 20-8 overall, 12-4 in SEC play. My warning to them, if they run him, is be careful what you wish for, because I think that job is dramatically more difficult now than it's ever been. I mentioned this with Paul when he joined us at 10:30, and you can listen to that interview wherever you get your podcast. I know we put it up on social as well. When Bobby Bowden left Florida State, he moved out of Tallahassee. He moved back to Birmingham, still kept his house in Tallahassee, but moved back to Birmingham, and then he spent time between Birmingham and his beach house in Panama City. Nick Saban lives in Tuscaloosa. He has an office in Bryant-Denny Stadium. I mentioned this video I saw on social of his daughter, I think, with his grandson or granddaughter running around the field at Bryant-Denny Stadium as Saban's walking with them. How in the hell can Kalen DeBoer ever have success there? I don't know how you could ever escape it, guys. And so he coaches that this season with that. He's got to deal with a quarterback competition with Austin Mack and Keelan Russell. Russell was a number one quarterback a couple of years ago, redshirt freshman. Austin Mack is a redshirt junior. So that's where this thing kind of stands in terms of where they're at. They have some talent. They've recruited well. They're not what they once were under Saban. Here's a hint, guys. They're never going to be what they were under Saban. That's over. That type of stockpiling of talent is done. And it feels like that this program either has struggled to adapt to the new era of college football or can't, because they don't have the finances to keep up.
Now, just 2 days ago, they flipped an Auburn commit in the class of 2027. So Alabama's always going to be able to recruit with some of the top teams in the SEC. I just don't know if they're going to be able to land them right out of high school or land them outside of the portal for a second chance. You know, in terms of actually sealing the deal on some of these recruits, because it's Alabama and they're for at least the next 10 years going to have they're still going to be Alabama, damn it. But I do wonder, with the money in the state of Alabama kind of skewing Auburn, if War Eagle's not able to swoop in and gobble up the five stars that are at least in that state. The further we get from the Nick Saban thing, I think that Alabama fans, you can't ever be mad at Nick Saban for how much he won and for what he did to that program and really bringing it to the forefront of college football and kind of changing everything for college football in that state. But he kind of made this an impossible follow-up with everything that you just said that Kalen DeBoer's got to deal with. And probably everything after the next guy is going to be impossible so long as Nick Saban's one of the premier voices in the sport, remaining one of the premier voices while he remains a fixture on campus. He's got a statue, and he's not dead.
And he's walking around. Like, he's going to games. It's the craziest thing ever. Like, even here, guys, Tress left. He moved out of town. Urban left. Sold his house. He's still got an apartment, but he sold his house. Like, that's what you do. You allow the new guy to kind of sow his own oats a little bit here. Jacob, I mean, like, come on.
Yeah. And that's why it's so tough, because you're going to a whole new situation for Kalen DeBoer. And so, like, you're trying to build it the way that you built Washington, basically, and making it yours. But it was the most impossible job to fill because of what Nick Saban did. And their standard level is the same as we have it up here in Columbus. Mm-hmm. You got to win now. You got to be constantly competing for championships. 10-2 at worst is their expectation. So it's tough. And like, I want to say, give him time to build it with his guys, but you really can't with the standard of Alabama.
Yeah. And I don't know, because I think he got a new contract when he was flirting with Michigan.
Yeah, he did.
He did.
Right. So they really can't go anywhere. And I don't think they should. I think he's a hell of a coach. Just a history lesson, though, for the people and the young kids out there who think that Alabama has always just been this, what they were under Saban. Go back to after Gene Stallings, who was the previous head coach who won a national championship at Alabama. They hire Mike DeBose. He goes 4-7, 7-5, 10-3, 3-8. Then he's fired. They hire Dennis Franchione. He goes 7-5, 10-3, then leaves Alabama to go coach Texas A&M. So think about that. Then they hire Mike Shula. Mike Shula goes 4-9, 6-6, 10-2, 6-6 before they luck into Saban. And they really lucked into him. Like, if Saban gets Drew Brees at Miami, maybe he never goes there. Now, Saban's run is the best run in the history of the sport. It just is. I mean, it's just ridiculous that he won 6 national championships in that tenure. And did so in a year where in an era where he had to win it on the field. It's really, really crazy to wrap your head around the amount of success that they had. But at the same time, holy smokes, I really don't know where they go from here. And I think it's a massive season for him. It's a massive season for that program. It's going to come down to the quarterback play. Their schedule is, I mean, you got to give them some credit. Like, they play the hits, man. They're playing Florida State this year. Florida State's not what they used to be. But they go East Carolina, then at Kentucky week 2, Florida State week 3, South Carolina week 4, at Mississippi State, Georgia again back on the schedule, and that's traditionally not the case, at Tennessee, Texas A&M, LSU, Vanderbilt, Chattanooga, Auburn. Like, his success, 9-3?
It's a playoff record. I mean, that's a playoff schedule.
Yeah.
I think I see 10-2 at the best.
Best.
Because, like, it helps that you get Georgia at home, but, like, at Tennessee, at LSU, you get Texas A&M at home, which is nice. But, like, I think those are at least 2 for sure losses, because it's not easy, their rivalry with Tennessee, and then what LSU has this year. That Georgia game could be what makes it or breaks it for them.
Yeah, and the reality is that that gives you no room for error in a game that you lose that you shouldn't.
Right.
So there's that part of it, too. Very tricky year from them. Very interesting to see where they go. We'll hit the categories with the Crimson Tide coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right?
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Have you ever met a man who wins money betting on tennis? Enter Scotty Vegas. Join Scotty and Dave Biddle for On the Money.
Presented by Ohio for Responsible Gambling.
Sunday mornings at 9 on The Fan.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
After that very smoky start to the day, conditions gradually improve through the afternoon and especially toward the evening hours. Partly cloudy skies develop. It'll be warm with highs around 90. A couple of showers and storms are possible later today as well. For the overnight hours, partly cloudy skies, mid-70s. Saturday, warm, humid, breezy at times. Highs in the upper 80s with scattered showers and thunderstorms mainly in the afternoon and evening. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcast. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Bo knows many people. He talks to the interesting ones on this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
Luke Robinson, Locked On Bama, coming up in 12 minutes from now. Between now and then, let's hit the categories on the Crimson Tide. This is making Tim May happy. Is this the one we've heard the most over the last 15 years? Right?
Probably.
Yeah. Alabama.
Been a lot of this in the Saban run. All right, guys, the categories, we kick it off. College Football 26 adaptability grade, Reese.
I think it's a C+, slightly above average. Interesting, I was looking at their schedule, and at rolltide.com/sports/football/schedule, all of their games have a presenting sponsor. All of their home games are presented by a different company. Like, I see Chevron, I see Coca-Cola, I see Regions. So they're trying to do everything they can, similarly to how Ohio State's just trying to find money where it can. Obviously, Kalen DeBoer is not the recruiter that Nick Saban is, but it's, I think, above average because they've still got a little bit of that shine.
Yep. I think I'm going to go straight C because, like, when I think of this, I think of, like, I think of recruiting mostly and transfer portal and how you're handling NIL and divvying that out. And all their best players have just come up here. Caleb Downs, Seth McLaughlin, the two guys this year, Quay Rousseau, James Smith, like.
How about our quarterback?
Julian Sand too. Exactly. Like, so they're, I don't think they've really killed it in the transfer portal on their end, and they're losing all of their top guys and really just helping us out, making it a pipeline from Tuscaloosa to Columbus and then the NFL, I guess.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's a C for me.
I think it's a C plus right now, but I think Saban knew it was an F, and that's why he left. He knew what was coming. Remember that press conference? Or that wasn't a press conference. He had that availability in Birmingham where he talked about Texas A&M buying it and we need everyone to buy. He knew it. He knew it was coming. I don't think he had any interest in not being the head coach in Alabama, but I think he knew he couldn't keep it the way that he was doing it. And so he got out while the getting was good. So I think that they've improved, to Reese's point. They're doing okay in recruiting. They're hanging in there. But yeah, they'll never get back to where they were. And I think Saban knew it was a D or an F, and that's why he got the heck out of there. And we'll see what happens going forward. Uniform brand grade for the Crimson Tide, Reese.
I think it's a B. Like, I love their uniforms. I love it. They haven't changed them.
Yeah.
There's that story that you told about Nick Saban was being pressured by Nike. He's like, all right, I'll give you a change. And it was the smallest thing that you could not notice on television.
He put the faintest houndstooth pattern in the numbers. That's all he did. They said, we need you to wear pro combat. He said, fine. You can put a faint houndstooth. You couldn't even see it. You'd have to, like, see a physical jersey to see it. That's all that he would give him. Nothing.
I'll go B plus because, like, the jersey itself is pretty plain, but it's traditional. And so, like, for a brand wise, it gets to an A. It's still Alabama. Like, that's what you're getting.
It's an A minus for me. I think the uniforms are great. I love that they haven't changed them. I love that they randomly have Big Al, like this elephant, but they're Crimson Tide, which is something that happens in the ocean. Like, all of it wins, and I think just the history just drips. I don't love the color scheme, which is the only reason I keep it out of the AA plus range, but I think everything else, they pretty much hit it out of the park with the brand. Historical player you'd pick to add to this Alabama team, Reese?
Devontae Smith's, I think, the most obvious. I think it would be fun if they brought back Terrence Mount Cody.
You always like him.
And just your guy. Just to see how that would go.
I think I'd like to see Derrick Henry back in college just to see what that would be like.
That's probably the right answer.
But because of Williams, like, I want somebody that can get him the ball.
They need a quarterback.
Yeah, they need a quarterback.
They got a couple good ones.
So I'm going to go Tua. Just sling that thing to him. Hit him on the deep balls.
Yeah, I was thinking Derrick Henry jumped to mind first and foremost, but then you think quarterbacks. It's crazy that they had Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, Ruggs. Like, that was all one group of talent that they had. There was just a stupefying amount of talent. It probably is college Tua. That's probably, or Bryce Young. I mean, Bryce Young won the Heisman. Bryce Young would be pretty. Maybe I'll go Bryce Young just to have a little bit of variety there. I'll go Bryce Young quarterbacking this team. I think they'd be in a pretty good spot. Would they get an official visit from Friday Night Lights back half of the series quarterback Vince Howard, Reese?
I don't think so. I'm leaning no. I think all of the Texas schools, Oklahoma, Georgia, LSU would be yes. I think Alabama would just kind of get left behind.
Yeah, I'm going no as well. I don't see it. Just all the reasons that you gave, Reese, they're just kind of a Texas guy. I don't view him going that far east.
Be interesting to see what they do at recruiting quarterbacks in the future, too. Keelan Russell was a big one. DeBoer got him right away. They need him to. My hunch is they want him to win that job. You know, be my guess. I mean, they lost Saban. Saban had the ability to recruit anywhere. DeBoer's a pretty good offensive guy. He got Griggs with him back now, so there's maybe that works out in a good way. But I think you're right. I don't think Vince Howard's taking this trip to Tuscaloosa anymore based on where that program is at the moment. I think
they do need
SECs,
a quarterback.
I mean, Russell was a huge recruit.
Russell's from Dallas.
Yeah. I mean, he was a massive guy, so, you know, maybe. I think I'm with you guys on your read of Vince. I think it's more of a Texas. I'm sure he'd look at Ohio State, maybe USC for the glamour, those type of places. I don't know that you're going to see him in Tuscaloosa. That doesn't feel like a fit. Coach grade for Kalen DeBoer. How do you see it, Reese?
I'm going to give him a B. I think he's a good football coach, and he's gotten Alabama to the college football playoff, and they won a game in the college football playoff. They played for the SEC championship in his second season. Mm-hmm. But Alabama hates him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a B as well. I do really like Kalen DeBoer, especially when he was at Washington. He's a great football mind, and I think he is a really good coach. But like we were mentioning in the last segment, like it's the most impossible job to follow.
It's almost ridiculous that Saban, like, I'm sure nobody can hold his feet to the fire, but it's almost like, dude, leave. Get out of here. Go to the lake house somewhere. Go to the lake house in Georgia or Alabama, wherever the lake house is, and just chill. I think this guy's a tremendous head coach. I mean, he has earned everything that he's gotten in the sport, from the winning at Sioux Falls to being an assistant everywhere, his assistant at Indiana, and the job he did at Washington, where he went 11-2 and 14-1 and played the national championship game in that. He went 9-4 in year one with that mass exodus that you talked about. No Saban, no Downs, no McLaughlin. Their receiver went to Texas, and they went 9-4 in year one, and then last year backed it up with an 11-4, and when they went 7-1 in the league. So I think he's an A-. I just don't know. To me, it's the George line in Seinfeld. It's not me, it's you. That's what it's not DeBoer. I think it's Alabama. I just think that job is a much more difficult job now than it was 7 years ago when Saban was there. And it's going to be very, very difficult. Sliding doors moment for Alabama, Reese.
I think this might be the sliding doors moment in all of football. Is in 2006 at the Miami Dolphins pass, Drew Brees. And his shoulder physical.
So just for the kids, Saban's at Miami. He leaves LSU, builds that into a monster, leaves LSU, goes to Miami to go back to the NFL. They have an ability to sign one of two free agent quarterbacks. They bring in Dante Culpepper. They bring in Drew Brees. Drew Brees cannot get cleared by the Dolphins docs because of his shoulder. So they go Culpepper. Culpepper falls flat on his face. Brees goes on to win Super Bowls and is a first ballot Hall of Famer with the New Orleans Saints. It is, I think you're right, Reese. I think it is the sliding doors moment in the history of college football. Because if Drew Brees goes to Miami, Saban doesn't go to Alabama, and who the hell knows what happens? Because I went over this earlier, they were caroming out of control. Dennis Franchione, remember they had Mike Price, the guy from Washington State who got caught with the strippers? I think he was, and he was like, it's rolling, baby, like all of that. And then they went with Mike Shula. Like, who knows where this goes or what happens to that program if that moment doesn't happen. I think that's the sliding doors moment in football over the last quarter century, Jacob.
For the sake of being different, though, I'm going to go with the 2012 national championship of what if they played Ohio State. I still think, though, like, is how Urban left that game, saying like they're completely different than us and like that's the level we need to be at and like have that intimidation factor. But still, the undefeated Ohio State team against Alabama in the national championship, what could that have been?
Well, the crazy thing is Bama wouldn't have been in it. That would have
that's
been
right. It would have been Notre Dame.
That's right. Because they were both undefeated.
Yeah, so it takes, so it takes the championship away.
It takes it away. The other one is if Colt McCoy doesn't get hurt in the first drive of his first national title in the Rose Bowl, and they have to go to a true freshman. Another really good one is what if they lose to Oklahoma as Kalen DeBoer, the coach at Michigan? Like, there's a lot. There's a lot of them for Alabama. Win it all, make the playoff too soon, flame out. What do you see, Reese?
Well, they better win it all. You know, roll Kalen DeBoer right out of Tuscaloosa. I think it's a playoff team.
Yeah, I'm there too. I think it's a playoff team.
We don't really have a category of what I think they are. I think they're a just miss.
Okay.
I can be talking to that, yeah.
I think they're going 9-3, and I think they're going to be like ranked 15th in the country, and they're going to be one of these teams that Paul it's Feinbaum's on saying, we got their schedule. They got to get them in. Like, you know, Sankey's going to be lobbying them. I feel like they just miss it a little bit.
This is why we need expansion.
Expand it to 64. Why stop? Luke Robinson in 2 minutes behind enemy lines with the Tide. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's the weather outside? Who cares? Bakers and shorts. This is Bishop and Friends.
20 Most Interesting continues. We were at Auburn yesterday. We are in Tuscaloosa today with the Tide. For perspective on the Crimson Tide, Luke Robinson joins us. Locked On Bama on the Bryant Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Luke, thanks so much for taking the time. Before we get into the season and just kind of the landscape of all of it, and obviously there's a lot going on down there, if Kalen DeBoer and Bama loses to Oklahoma, is he the coach at Michigan right now?
No, I don't think so. No, okay. I don't think so at all. I mean, really, that rumor spread like wildfire, and it's fun too. You know, in the social media age specifically, you know, people want to put something out there for clicks, and then what happens is you get your clicks, and even if it's not right, I mean, how often does it cost you? How often does somebody say, man, their reputation was ruined by this? And it just never is, because people, we all have the attention span of a fruit fly, and I'm included in that group. And so what you do is you look at this, you go, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. And then you look at the bright, shiny thing that's right after it, and it just keeps rolling on. But no, I don't think that was going to happen.
Well said by you. I try to press that on the program quite a bit, that there is no consequence for illegitimate or inaccurate reporting anymore. You can kind of say whatever you want, which is a little scary, I think, for all of us. Okay, so I was, just quick background here, I was in Tallahassee when Bobby Bowden left and became Jimbo Fisher, and Bobby left town. He left. He went to Birmingham, and then he went to Panama City, and he was not in Tallahassee much at all. And here in Columbus, I was here when Jim Tressel left, and I was here when Urban Meyer left, and they both left town. Nick Saban appears to be omnipresent at Alabama. How can Kalen, how is he managing that, and how awkward can that be for him? To me, it would seem to be almost impossible. It's not like he's trying to get out of his shadow. My God, Luke, he's living in his house. At least that's the way it feels.
You know, I think at first it could have been a little difficult. I think all that is kind of past. I mean, Nick Saban has sort of faded into not czar of college football, but sort of rep. Universal rep for college football. I mean, he loves Alabama. He loves Tuscaloosa, does a lot of charity work here, has some other businesses here. And you're right, he's omnipresent. He seems to be everywhere. He's also omnipotent, I mean, in Tuscaloosa. So he can do whatever he wants to. But I think that, you know, if Nick Saban had moved to Alaska or Fiji, his presence would still be felt. That wouldn't matter. And so I think that is it. Really, Saban has done a great job trying to help Kalen DeBoer. If you ask me, it's not like Saban has gotten on the radio and done things like, well, if I was coach, I would have done this instead of calling that play, or, you know, I would have hired this guy instead of that guy, or I'd play this quarterback instead of that one. Saban's been pretty helpful for Alabama for the most part, but I think overall, and I mean this sincerely, there are people out there who don't like Nick Saban, and I get it because he was incredibly successful. And when people are really successful and you usually beat other people's brains in all the time, they tend not to like you. But I think now that we're 3 years away from him, people should respect what he did for the game, the opinions he has. He's the greatest coach of all time. And yeah. I think he also has a genuine, and I mean, I've met Nick several times. I have one of my close friends is one of his close friends. I mean, I'm not trying to do a name game here. I'm just telling you the truth. And I've had conversations with that friend of mine, and I can tell you right now, Nick loves college football. He wants the best for it. Now, is his opinion always going to be 100% correct? And in my view, yes. I'll never doubt the man ever because I'm an Alabama homer. But I think that he will be wrong sometimes. There's no doubt. But I do believe it all comes from a place of, I want college football to be better. And yes, he still can be an Alabama fan and still want college football to be good too. It's not just, I want to do what's best for Alabama. I want to do what's best for the sport. I truly believe that's the way he thinks.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I agree with you on most of what you said there. I think what makes this so interesting from 30,000 feet is he got out at the time when all of this chaos was coming. And I don't know Alabama like you do, but I was in that part of the country for 7 years and certainly know some of the programs that have a lot of money and got billionaire boosters. And heck, you got one in the state of Alabama that's got two billionaire boosters that they're tied to in Auburn. So when they need to get some money, they can do it in a hurry. How is Alabama combating that? Because to my knowledge, and I just had Paul on an hour ago and he and I were talking about it a little bit, Feinbaum, like, where's the money going to come from, and how are they finding it?
That's the big question. Look, it's not a big deal for Texas. It's not a big deal for Texas A&M. And, yes, I know Auburn has Tim Cook, who's the CEO at Apple, and I know they have Jimmy Rain, who is the CEO, and his family founded Great Southern Wood. Jimmy Rain is a huge Auburn guy, and my company, that my family business that I work for, we've done a lot of work for him. He's a fantastic human being. And Tim Cook has contributed to Auburn, but I wouldn't necessarily say he's like throwing bags of money at them. I think Alabama and Auburn and some other schools like that are all sort of in the same boat. You've got to go. Okay. You got to get quantity over quality. Sometimes you got to get like a lot of $10 contributions where you can. Now, Alabama's got a huge brand, and they're not nearly as bad off as some people like to think that they are. They're in pretty good shape NIL-wise. But the problem is it's growing so exponentially year over year that, you know, people are talking about Alabama's recruiting. I'm not trying to deviate from the question, but I'm getting to a point here. Sure. So Alabama's recruiting class is ranked right in the 30s right now, and around these parts, people are just, you know, hamming it up, and they're loving it. And Jimmy and I on Locked On Bama keep saying, guys, this year was always going to be like this. It's going to be a small class. They're not going to overspend for somebody because they want to retain who they have. And what I mean by that is, let's say Keelan Russell wins the quarterback job. And I'm pulling numbers out of there. These are not confirmed, or these are just numbers I'm giving you. That let's say Keelan Russell's making $500,000 this year in NIL money and revenue share and all that. If he is the starting quarterback, if he's as good as I think he's going to be, and I think he's going to be really good, next year he may command $5-6 million. And so you've got to be ready for that. And if you've overspent for, say, a wide receiver in this class, you may not be able to pay the guy who is the face of your program. And it just gets very difficult. Look, Texas and Texas A&M, they got oil money, you know, coming out of their ears. Yeah. But even they will get to a point. All these people keep saying that, oh, yeah, they'll always have the money. And it's true, SMU, all those places. But these people don't have money because they're dumb. They have money because they're smart. And they know, okay, they're going to reach a point of, hey, look, I'm tired of paying, you know, X amount of millions and millions and millions of dollars to go 8-4. You know, if we don't make the playoffs, I mean, I don't get any of this money back. You know, I don't get a ring myself. So I think that it's going to come to a head. We're going to have to do something. And I hate to be that guy who comes in and says, we got to do something. Okay, Luke, what do you want to do? I have no idea. And I don't have an idea. But I know that something has to be done, because I'm a fan like the rest of your guys that are listening to this right now. And I'd be willing to bet dollars donuts. A lot of them listening are going, I totally agree. We've got to do something. I have no idea what it is, because at the same time, I think kids deserve some money. And I think that we've got to have opportunity for some people. And I don't know how in the world we're going to cap this thing.
Yeah, it's got to be an NFL model, and they got to do contracts and call it professional football, and then you get some control back. That's kind of it, I think. But that's a topic for another day, Luke. So in terms of this year's success, you mentioned Russell, and that would be a lottery ticket. If he goes, we know who he was in recruiting, and certainly it feels like he's ready to go. If Alabama, okay, two-parter. What are realistic, and I table this with understanding you're in Tuscaloosa and I'm in Columbus, and there is no such thing as realistic when you're talking about these two fan bases. But what is a realistic expectation for Alabama this year? If they achieve that, why will they achieve that? If they fall short, why won't they achieve it?
I think realistic is undefeated. I don't think that will happen. I also think realistic is 8-4, and I'm going to hold my nose and say 7-5, but I don't think those will happen either. My new goal, my annual goal, is to go 10-2. If Alabama goes 10-2 from here until the end of time, we'll make the playoffs every year, and there won't even be a debate about it, because we're going to play. Next year we play Ohio State at Ohio State, and then Ohio State comes here. Then we got Notre Dame on the schedule, and we're going to have this arduous SEC slate. So that will never be in question. So my goal is to go 10-2. But I do think Alabama, if to reach the highest of expectations, I think that means Keelan Russell is a thing like I thought he was going to be a thing. Mm-hmm. I also means Ryan Coleman Williams. And yes, it used to be Ryan Williams. He has added Coleman to the middle of it. He's also changed his number to number one. And all Alabama fans like myself are hoping that means he's not going to be dropping passes this year.
Right.
He is electric, and he is a ton of fun. And I'm with the Alabama Sports Radio Network, High School Sports Radio Network, and I have called Ryan Williams for a long time now. That dude was—he was two-time state player of the year in Alabama, and he didn't play his senior year in high school because he went straight to Alabama. That guy's nuts. He's out of bounds good, but he just had a thing last year. I don't know what happened. He had a sophomore slump, and so it means he's good again. It also means some of these defensive transfers that Alabama got in, like Caleb Woodson and Devin Tompkins from Virginia Tech and USC, respectively, they have come in and played really well. I don't think it's crazy, because Alabama's got a four-game stretch in here where you got like Georgia and Tennessee and LSU and Texas A&M all back-to-back-to-back. That's going to be tough. Now, there's an off week in there, but that's going to be really tough. But if they can go 3-1 in that stretch, I mean, anything's on the table for this squad.
Yeah, going to be a fun one. Very interesting one down there. Really enjoyed the conversation, Luke. Thanks so much for your time.
Hey, appreciate you guys for having me.
All right, there he goes. Luke Robinson, Locked On Bama, on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Interesting week on 20 Most Interesting, getting Texas Tech, Texas, Oklahoma, Auburn, and Alabama. And, of course, you can get those wherever you get your podcast. We always do them in the 11 o'clock hour, so you can check those out if you're interested on some of those programs and some local perspective on all of those programs. Get you three things on a Friday up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Fall camp is coming. Will Julian Sayin take his game to the next level? Will Matt Patricia's defense dominate again? Join us live for training camp fun starting Thursday, August 6th. Your home of the Buckeyes. Woo! The Fan.
All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat, because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, Race, we're on the poll today.
Daily Fan Poll, sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. It asks, would you watch a third-place game in the NFL? 57% of you are liars and say no.
How do you feel about that?
I think we'd watch.
Would you? Or do you mean we, the collective?
We, the collective. It would depend on the game. But I think if you were to, you'd have to make concessions if the NFL truly wanted this with the players and the Players Association. But if you gave the proper incentives and the CBA negotiated properly, I think if this was available, fans would watch because they'd like to gamble on it.
What would that have been this year? That would have been the Patriots beat. Who did they beat in the AFC Championship game? They beat Denver?
That sounds right, because of Bo Nix. And it wasn't Bo Nix
hurt. Bo Nix. So it would have been a beaten up Denver, and then the Seahawks beat Ramit.
That sounds right.
Is that right?
So bad Denver
versus Rams.
A game Los Angeles squad.
Can you imagine like going to Stafford and McVay and saying, hey, yeah, we're going to play one next week? I think this in general, whether it's pro, right, we're doing this because the World Cup consolation game on Saturday, pro, U Sports, whatever. If you are not playing in a true double elimination game, then I think a third place, fourth place thing, there's no value in it.
He was the Commanders in the NFC Championship.
No. That was 2 years ago.
Okay. Yeah, that was 2 years.
2 years ago. That was when they had Jaden Daniels. Pretty sure it was Rams.
It was.
Yeah, you're right. Yep. 31-27, Seattle.
Yeah. So, I just think in general, like if we're not playing for the whole thing, then let's just get out of here and get everybody home healthy. That's kind of my view of it. So, I wouldn't watch, but I think you, the collective, you would. And I think if there's gambling to be made on it, then you're going to do, I don't think it would be 20 million. I bet it would be like 10, between 10 and 15. Maybe I'm low on that. But I think it'd be 10 or 15 million for that thing, but you're not playing for anything. So it makes it a tougher sell. Let's get you three things on a Friday.
One, two, three
things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
Number one for me, and we did four SEC teams this week, Texas, Oklahoma, Auburn, and Alabama on the show. Luke Robinson was great. He was the Locked On Bama guy. He just sounded Bama, everything about it. And it is also a perfect example of why Paul's show works. Everybody in that league, most everybody in that league, believes that they can win a national title. The delusion of grandeur is off the charts. Like Luke said, that the ceiling is 12-0. At that, I see a ton of questions with this Alabama team. Maybe he's right, maybe he's not. But what matters the most, the reason that it works down there, is because everybody believes it. You cannot go to Madison, and we'll do Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin's on our list. I know East Lansing. I know Michigan State's on our list. They're not going to go up there and say, with first-year Pat Fitzgerald, we're going 12-0. They're reasonable. Down there, they're not. They're not reasonable.
One of the things I think we love about college football. Yeah. First thing for me, so we're going to be doing South Florida and a group of five discussion this coming Monday. It'll be Baker and Joshua Perry. So the radio voice of the South Florida Bulls, Jim Lighthall, is going to be the guest at 11:30 on that. So we'll get some perspective from a guy that's, you know, watched with Alex Golish last year. And now in his first season in the booth, you'll see he's been up close and personal to how Brian Hartline has kind of taken and put his own stamp on this program.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's really interesting about that conversation that those guys will have on Monday is who in the group of six now can rock this party? Because there's a lot of turnover to a lot of these places last year.
First thing for me, our guy Bruce Thornton has a chance to play for a championship in the NBA Summer League. The semifinals are set, and they play the Grizzlies, which will have Cam Boozer, and then the Lakers will play the Warriors on the other side. And Bruce Thornton, man, he's been killing it. I think he had 23 points in their game last night, averaging over 20 points a game right now.
Are you watching this?
Yes, absolutely.
God, you have a sickness.
Is that even a question?
You have such a sickness. It's crazy. Hey, at least you got good rookies to watch, and they've all put on a show, so that part's a little fun. But yeah, you may need an elixir
oh my goodness.
For what ails you, my friend. You may. number two for me, I hope by the time I get back in a week, the LeBron stuff is done. I think they've really mismanaged this, and I think it's really painting them in kind of a weird light. I suppose if he ends up in Cleveland, it'll all be good, but this has been a very strange 2 weeks for him. At his age, at this point in his career, to kind of chase all this attention has been very, very silly to me.
I saw a video of Buccaneers tackle Tristan Wirfs hang cleaning 365 pounds. That's the most impressive thing I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's wild.
From a weightlifting standpoint, just to be able to lift that thing up, have it in the hang position, and throw it up on your shoulders. I know, like, Saquon Barkley, Nick Chubb have done some really impressive strength things, but just go to your gym, try to pick up 165 pounds, then try to see if you can do 265 pounds or, like, a regular deadlift.
I don't think I could do that.
Yeah, don't go and try 365. You'll blow your back out.
Yeah. Second thing, in a little over 12 hours from now, I will be getting on the road with my wife and daughter for a week-long trip, getting to the beach, leaving at about 2 a.m. tonight.
Ooh,
so that,
crafty.
Yeah, so that little Nora can sleep for the entire car ride. We're stopping in Chapel Hill on the way because we can't get into our place until 4 o'clock. We're going to Ocean Isle, which is like Holden Beach, right near North Carolina border. And so we got some time to kill, so we're going to run through Chapel Hill. I think maybe make a pit stop in Wilmington and then get down to the beach. Have a nice
little... Go get some shots up at the Dean Dome.
Hey, I'm going to try to.
Just walk in emphatically.
Yeah.
Most of these places, I just walk in like I own it, and then you can't believe how much you can get away with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just walk in and grab a ball. Number three for me, I'll be in Montana next week. Keep it between the navigational beacons. I will try to do the same out west. Look forward to some sort of grizzly encounters. My dad doing something inappropriate. It's all in play, as it always is when we go west.
Final thing, be careful out there. The air quality is at 307, which I'm being told is dangerous.
Yeah.
So it's a hairy day out there. So be careful. Check on your neighbors if you're able to. Just be safe this weekend, everybody.
Third thing for me, Rothman and Ice up next. Scotty Vegas is in for Matty Ice. They will be previewing the World Cup at 1:30, and Jensen Lewis comes on at 2:30 to talk about the second half of the baseball season. So stick around.
You have that to look forward to, which is nice. We are back on Monday. Thanks for listening, buddy. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB, nobody likes waiting around.